exactly 8:30. We only have got 4 members. I'm not sure if you want us to wait maybe 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Matunta.
Okay.
Maybe we can share the agenda in the meantime, Mr. Matunta. Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Manager.
Morning, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Morning, colleagues.
Morning, Chairperson.
Morning, Mr. Matunta.
Yes, we do have enough members to start the meeting. And then another thing that I was advised by Communication in Parliament, the meeting will be live on TV and also social media. So where possible, members are requested to switch on their videos where possible if you do not affected by load shedding. That's all, Chairperson. Over to you.
Okay, thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. Matunzi. Good morning, honorable members. Morning, Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, and the entire staff, and all the colleagues who are accompanying the minister, the officials the Portfolio Committee. Welcome to this important meeting today. The reason we are starting earlier today is as a result that we could not have a Portfolio Committee meeting last week. And we, the main call had reflected on this delays of
recording in progress.
Results, we've managed to agree that at least we must start at half past eight so that we give opportunity to the issues that are going to be presented to the committee. And to that effect, we've communicated with the minister in writing on the issues of concerns that the committee has been raising. And I hope the minister will be able to comment on the letter we've communicated to him. The secondly is the issue on the late submission of the presentation to the Portfolio Committee, which we have been reminding the department and other stakeholders that are supporting, particularly the department, on the issues that they are sending the reports late and sometimes give difficult for members of the Portfolio Committee or our content advisor or researchers to interact with those reports. I think also the minister notes that we are not raising this matter for the first time. And I think we must be able to get into it so that we're able to close on this matter of late submission of presentations. At some point, we thought it's Mr. Matonsi who sent reports late. And we've now fully established that it's not on his part. It's at the level of the department. So that is a serious concern. I think we need to deal with that issue. One of the issues that at all times we manage to take into account the department is that when meetings are scheduled and issues are raised, people prepare. Those that are going to interact with the Portfolio Committee members. And when we postponed a meeting, it deals with the program of the Portfolio Committee. And there's no way we're going to able to invite other members or the stakeholders to inform them to join for a particular day when they have not been ready or they're allocated a particular day. So when you postpone meetings of the Portfolio Committee late, it complicates the work of the Portfolio Committee. And I think we want the minister to make an impression on that. Also want to thank the observation we've made on the work continuously being done by the staff of Home Affairs. We have received a request from the Councillor in Joburg in what it is 84 for the Home Affairs Department to jointly with the police to come and conduct or to assist them to interact with the conditions or the situation in relation to the undocumented foreign nationals. And I want to applaud the department that you've managed to respond to that effect, to assist the community and the Ward Councillor in that part of the Gauteng in Joburg. We have noted the DM continuous work in terms of the services in the part of Eastern Cape, and we call all the stakeholders to be on the ground to continuously interact with the work of the department and the services that we must offer to our community. And I want to take that appreciation that this work must continue to go on the ground with all the resources so that we assist our community members for JV that they are looking for. The Joint Portfolio Committee oversight continuously underway with the police, Home Affairs, and Minerals and Energy. We've started in Limpopo, in Sekhukhune, and in Capricorn. And I think we're identifying some of the challenges that our communities are facing. We're pleased that this work that has been done at the level of the police and Home Affairs and the Minerals and Energy in terms of the issues that our people are struggling or have been interacting with in the level of the Portfolio Committees differently. And want to commend the teams that have been joining us in the joint oversight. We'll continue to the four provinces that will be following. There's an area which we need to deal with the Director General. You know that members are receiving most of the communications from members or from the community to assist in the problems that are facing departments. and we must be able to applaud to those that are, we are officials, and yourself, DG, that promptly responds to the issues that you are raising as committee members, members of parliament, including Mr. Sigama and other officials who are responsible to do that. We must, however, pay more attention to the improvement on your DDG immigration. I think it's Mr. Simon, who takes long to respond to queries. And we can't resolve queries at the level of the portfolio committee because we're unable to know what exactly are the issues. We send messages to his attention. It takes time to respond to members or the community or the complainants. He doesn't even acknowledge receipt of those complaints that were raised. We have now referred these matters to the Director General on the issues. There are issues that have been raised 2 months or so, and until today, people have not received acknowledgement or assistance to that level. So in terms of the administration and improving our communication work with society and our members, that's a central in terms of how we must be able to improve the Director General. We're bringing this thing to our attention so that you're able to interact with members of parliament in the various serving of the portfolio committee and councillors and any member of society that raises issues with the officials across. We've taken interest to focus on that, and we've instructed Mr. Matonsi to continuously track on the issues that have been raised to the department and those that are not responded. And from hence on, those issues will call the minister to respond directly to the portfolio committee henceforth as we move forward. I'm going to invite Mr. Matonsi to present apologies, and I'll invite minister if the apologies from the department, and then we'll take the items that have been adopted in agenda. Mr. Matonsi?
Yes, Chairperson, I've got only one apology because of load shedding. Ms. Lehuase, she was just in the meeting, but she just indicated that load shedding started at 8:15. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can invite the minister if the apologies and also remark on the letter we've communicated to for his attention. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members of the committee. I'll give over to the DG because I'm not sure who is he with, but on my side, I don't have any apologies. I'm sure the DG will introduce the staff and give apologies, if any. Thank you.
Director General. Minister.
I'm not sure whether he has been load shed or what's happening.
Okay.
I see Mr. Mavuso DDG here on the screen, and I saw the spokesperson. Maybe Mr. Mavuso, can you help? It looks like DG is not on the screen. I see the chief of staff, I see the CLO, but the most senior person I can see on the screen is Mr. Mavuso. Mr. Mavuso, are you able to help?
Yes, good morning, Minister. Good morning, Chairperson and members. Yes, from the department, we do have senior officials who are here, which is DDG Counter Corruption. Advocate Muite, DDG Sigama is here with us. The Minister has indicated the Chief of Staff and Mr. Njoko, and also we have Mr. David Labane from our communications, which he also from our communications. Thank you, Chairperson and Minister.
Okay, thank you, DDG Mavuso. Before we go to this first item, we want the Minister to impress on the comments and the correspondence we've sent for his attention. Minister?
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. And thanks for the letter I've received. I want to start, Chairperson, to explain, maybe apologize for the mishap that happened last week about a clash between the Lekgotla and the Portfolio Committee meeting. I wish to say, Chairperson, this committee is on record congratulating myself and the Deputy Minister for always being available for your meetings when we call, because indeed, we have always been available by moving other issues that we are supposed to attend to come to our committee. But it so happened that it was impossible with the issues of the Lekgotla. And because I had known the previous date when it was shifted, unfortunately, the mistake happened in my office because I was not in all the time. I'm also out, by the way, as the DM is out in the Eastern Cape, taking mobiles there to communities that are far from our offices. I'm running such a campaign in Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and some parts of Gauteng. I'm running around doing that very much. So I was not around for that long time, and I was not able to see that things have changed. But I will still try my best to give this committee priority. But where it's not possible, unfortunately, I will communicate and communicate in time. Like today, as I'm speaking here, there are three cabinet committee meetings. One of them was supposed to be chaired by me, as asked by the presidency, because both the deputy president and the president are not in. They usually chair cabinet committees. They asked me to chair it, and I apologize again because I could not apologize to you for the second time. But the Lekgotla chairperson, there was just no chance in the world that I'll miss it, because you know that Lekgotla discusses things of what must happen in the whole of next financial year. And if department is not there, it will be heavily, heavily be disadvantaged. So the issue of sending documents, late chair, the agreement between you and us is that we need to send documents 48 hours before the next meeting. If we calculate, it must be on a Sunday. If there's going to be a portfolio committee on a Tuesday. And indeed, the documents were on my table on Friday, and I was supposed to read them and send them to you on Sunday. But because of the program that I'm talking about, I wasn't there on Friday when they dropped it at home on my table because I was running around on the program as mentioned. When I came back to look through it, I discovered it would be unfair for me to send a document to the portfolio committee, which has got lots and lots of mistakes and inaccuracies. It was prepared by officials. I simply did not agree with it because I'm the one who's going to answer questions here. I can't, Chairperson, send a document and come and say, no, it's not me. I'm finally responsible. So I have to start from the scratch to make the corrections, and it took time. It's like parliamentary questions, Chairperson. They are signed off by me, but most of the information, because sometimes it's technical, is answered by various officials. And sometimes when it landed on my table last minute to send it to you, I discovered that the questions have been answered wrongly, very wrongly, in a way that I know, because I'm working with you as a political, as their political leader, that it won't be acceptable to members of parliament. So I start correcting them. Sometimes it wastes time. So what we have done after realizing this, we have put strict time frames in the department. When documents go where, when will they come to me, etc. For instance, when parliamentary questions arrive, they are not brought to my office. The CLO sends them to various departments where they must be answered and bring them to me when the product is finalized for me to approve them. And sometimes I do not approve them because they are wrong. So I'll make sure that we put very strict time frames for that to happen. On the questions of Mr. Yusuf Simons, the acting DDG for immigration, not responding to our question or not acknowledging them. I'm hearing about that today, Chairperson. If I am going to take responsibility for that, I'll respectfully ask that then every query must come through my office because I must have sight of it, because otherwise I'm going to be forced to answer things for which I was not aware. If any member of parliament directly sent a query to an official, and I'm sitting there, I don't even know that an official has got a query they are ignoring, I'm taking political responsibility as I should, but I wouldn't have known that such a query has been made. So I will ask that even if you make queries directly to them, please can I be copied so that I know that so many queries have been sent to so-and-so, so that I can supervise them and see if they've acknowledged. Because sometimes, yes, it might be that it takes a long time to investigate something after your queries. Remember, Chairperson, we announced in this committee that we are digitizing the 350 million records in Home Affairs. These are paper records. Sometimes the queries coming from members of parliament, even members of the public, need officials to go to the archives to search among the 350 million records and look for answers. And that's why the presidency and treasury, after we wrote a plan, that's why they agreed to give us this 2.4 billion rand over the next 3 years. Because we told them work is extremely impossible, it slows the country, because we are the ones who must give answers. But at least acknowledging a letter is standard, and I would like to impose that in the department. Forgive me if I did not do that before, because I thought it's a standard way of management, that when somebody writes you a letter, you at least acknowledge it, even if you are not able to give the answer now. But I must say to you that sometimes the fact that it takes so long is what you have mentioned about documents in our archives. And we have started that process of recruiting the young people who are going to do our documents. But in the meantime, we will acknowledge, I will make sure that we acknowledge, provided I know that something has been sent to an official. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. I wanted to draw that for your attention, because the committee want to compliment the good work of the Home Affairs. And that's why these issues are raised, for you to talk to the committee on the issues that they've been raised. And we're noting, and thanks for that response. I'm going to invite the minister to then deal with the first item, or delegate Mr. Mathonsi on the agenda item. Yes, yes. To brief us on the I will suggest, if it's possible, Mr. Mathonsi, we take item number 3 and 5 at the same time. Then we then make comments on the issues after that. Members, I'm trying to lobby for your consideration that we deal with they present item number 3 and number 5. Then we comment after that, and then we deal with item number 7. Can I establish if that would be a correct approach, Honorable Lizelle? Honorable Kanyile?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. Chairperson, am I audible?
Yes, yes.
Okay, I did not capture correctly what you were saying. Could you please repeat so that I can be able to comment properly? Thank you.
I was saying that I'm requesting members to reconsider that we take item 3 and 5 at the same time, then we comment after. So I'm trying to get sort guidance from members. Then we deal with...
We can proceed in that way. It's fine.
Okay. Honorable Modise, Mza.
That
Honorable
is in order, Chair. That's fine.
Honorable Tito.
Morning, Chair, and morning to my colleagues and everyone who is present. Yes, Chair, we can take item number 3 and 5. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, members. I think we'll proceed in that order. Minister, you are comfortable also, I think, with the item 3 and 4. Sorry, and 5, yeah.
No, Chairperson, thank you very much. I am quite comfortable with that. Yes, okay. Somebody flag the item on the screen, please. Yeah, do a slideshow, please. Yeah. Next slide, page 2. Can you move the slide? Yes. No, that's not the one. Yes, yes, okay, fine. Chairperson, the documents that you have asked from me is the progress on Zimbabwean exemption permit holders. That's item number one. From there comes the item on suspension of senior officials of Department of Home Affairs. The DG will present that. Then an update on the Shepherd Bushiri's escape. I'll present that. Then report with the findings and implementation plan for the recommendations made by the Ministerial Reviewing Committee on permits and visas. I will also present that to you, Chairperson. So let's go to the progress on the Zimbabwean exemption permit. Yes, Chairperson, this is what I've done. I'm sure you are aware that matters on the Zimbabwean permit are in court, not through one agency or one individual, but through quite a number of them, several of them. So for that reason, quite a number of things cannot be said because they are either in the affidavits or in court papers or in whatever way our lawyers wish to defend. What I've done, I've just outlined to you the whole structure of what happened since December 2021 until now and what is likely to happen in future. In other words, the clear process. Can we start? So in that regard, I've issued in the document a directive which we issued on the 29th of December 2021, a Gazette of January 7, 2022, the press statement we issued on the same day, 7 January 2022, the directive issued into September 2022, that's the recent one, and a press statement made on the same day in 2022. And then I'm outlining all the legal actions that have been taken against the department. Can we start with the directive on December? Yeah, this directive is in the public eye, Chairperson. I am not going to read it because it has been there for more than a year now. It was just a directive in legal terms to deal with in terms of Section 31.2B, read with Section 31.2D of the Immigration Act. That as the Minister of Home Affairs, in terms of the powers bestowed to me, in terms of those acts, have decided to extend the Zimbabwean exemption granted national for a period of 12 months to allow for the holders thereof to apply for one or other visas provided for in the Immigration Act. Remember, Chairperson, that the people who are on the Zimbabwean exemption permit, the 178,000 of them, are on a special dispensation and are not on the normal immigration processes, as are the other Zimbabweans or the other nationals from all over the world. And this state of affairs has been extended many times, as you know, even before my time. So I was just saying we believe it was time to stop something that we regarded as always temporary, so that we give people a year to apply for the other permits, which, as you know, we have got 17 of them under the Immigration Act. And so I was issuing that directive in that regard. Next slide. Who is moving my slide? Are you having technical problems or what? Yes. Basically, I was just explaining the validity and all the issues in the Immigration Act. Can you move on? Now, on the 7th of January, to legalize the whole directive, I gazetted it, and it's in Government Gazette number 45727, is volume number 679. I did not put the gazette here because everybody, even members of the public, ought to have access to a government gazette once it has been published. All I can give is to give you numbers for anybody who wants to refer. On the same day, I issued a press statement. This press statement was meant to explain to members of the public, to explain to the media, to explain to Zimbabwe exemption holders and to explain to any other interested party what actually we are doing, why we are doing it, and what are the parameters. Among others, it explains to people what they need to do in order to apply for the other permits. It also gives them addresses of where they must inquire if they've got any inquiries about this matter. Basically, that was the aim of this press statement. Can you move on? Yeah, that's exactly what I was summarizing. Can you move on? It was just an explanation. And move on again. I am not going to go through it again because it has been in the public eye for a long time. Move. Page 13, page 14. Yeah. That is the end of our press statement. And we decided, in order for there to be understanding, to take that directive, something we mentioned in the press statement, and send it to individuals, all 178,000 of them, because remember, we have got their files. The files that have been stored since 2017 when they were granted the ZEP. We went to those files, looked for their addresses, and sent them that directive. And then we also sent them via SMSs in case we might not reach on their addresses or they've changed their email addresses or whatsoever. We also gazetted, as I've already said, so that anybody who has got access to the government gazette can read it. We also bought advertorials in newspapers to put the same thing. We also sent a letter to the Zimbabwean embassy via the minister of DERCO. I also had a meeting with the Zimbabwean ambassador to further explain. So we tried to explain from many angles exactly what's going on and why are we doing it. Next. Yes, now, since that time, Chairperson, realizing the amount of work that needs to be done and be done diligently, you may remember that item number 4, you want a progress on the issue of review of permits that have been issued in South Africa since 2004. And I appointed a committee headed by Dr. Cassius Lubisi, the former Director General in the presidency, working together with data analysts, working together with investigators from the former Scorpions and the investigators who were involved in state capture. And as I said, with people who could analyze data, they worked together to produce a report which was presented to you, if I'm not mistaken, on the 14th of July to this committee. Now, I decided, Chairperson, that in order to do service to the applications from Zimbabweans, and there are two types of applications we're expecting. Firstly, is a visa in terms of the Normal Immigration Act 2002. As I said, we have got 17 of them. Secondly, is an application for a waiver where an applicant might say, look, these are my conditions. You said we must apply for this visa, but these are my conditions, and put clear conditions there and circumstances. I mean to say, not conditions. These are my circumstances, and I'm asking for a waiver from what you have decreed or from what you have directed. That's what we mean by waivers. So we realized that work needs experts, not just the people who are working normally in our department, because it's quite a special dispensation. So the same team, because they've completed their work, I appointed them, but together with 6 senior counsels from the private sector who are not working for the state. Sorry, 3. So that is a total of 6. It's the 3 people who were dealing with the review of permits and 3 senior counsels. I appointed them to come and do this work. They have been having several meetings, lots of them, to outline and workshop to outline how the work is going to be done so that there is common understanding and they follow similar standards when they start the work. On the 1st of September, however, they wrote to me, they said they've had a meeting for the whole day of that 1st of September, and they've developed a plan of how the work is going to go. And they explained to me that for the visas, they received 4,000 applications, and for the waivers, they received about 6,000. Looking at what is still coming and the amount of work according to their plan, they advised me that it will be better to give an extension of 6 months up to the 30th of June 2023, because there's no way with what is awaiting them, with the plan they are having, that they'll finish by December. I acceded to that advice, Chairperson. I immediately acceded the following day. That is why I wrote that directive issued on the 2nd of September. This directive is exactly the same as I issued on the 29th of December 2021, but obviously it will differ with dates. And I have to issue it again so that there is no legal confusion. Can you move, please? Again? I'm not going to read the directive again, Chair. As I said, it's in the public eye. And then on the same day, can you move back? Yes, on the same day, I issued a press statement, just like I did on the 7th of January. On the 2nd of September, with the new changes, I issued a press statement that explained again why we are giving this extension, how it will affect people, and what must happen. That press statement was issued on the 2nd of September 2022, and you can see it on the screen there. Thank you. Yeah, can you move? Move again. Yes. Now, Chairperson, just to summarize the legal issues that we are faced with, the various organizations and fora representing ZEP holders have taken the department to court with regard to the issue of ZEP permit. This court case is to do with the directives that I issued on the 29th of December last year. Firstly, we have got African Amity and Zimbabwe Permit Holders Association. Then we have got Zimbabwe Diaspora Association, NPC. Then we have got the Helen Sussman Foundation and a consortium for refugee and migrants in South Africa called COMSA as an intervening party. In other words, COMSA doesn't have a court case of their own. They are intervening on the matter between the department and the Helen Sussman Foundation. And so we did not write them as an individual organization that is going to court, because they are doing it via an intervention. And lastly, we have got Zimbabwe Immigration Federation. That's exactly, and the court case was supposed to sit in October. I'm sure many of you have seen a tweet, which I also saw this morning, where they are saying we ran out of money, and so we are running away from this court case. Chairperson, we not. What has happened is that we have written to the Pretoria High Court. In view of this extension that I've made, certain papers have been required from us. Certain new affidavits need to be written. And we believe the dates that have been agreed upon will no longer be possible. Any party to this type of court case can do that. But before the judge finalizes whether they accept and extend, I mean, change the dates or not, all the parties are called together in a meeting. It has got nothing to do with money or incompetence, as I've seen on the tweet. It has just court processes, Chairperson, which are normal when matters like this are being prepared for the court. Thank you very much, Chair. I will now straight move to number 4, as asked by the committee. This one is number 2. It will be done by the DG. Can you pass it? Yes. Yes. This is number... No. This is number 3. I'm going to do it, but not now. I've been asked to do number four, not number three. Yes.
No, yeah. No. Sorry, Minister. We requested that you deal with the first item and the second. Then we'll deal with the payments as the last item.
Oh, the second one, Chairperson, I'm sorry. The second one is the suspension of officials, isn't it?
Mr. Matons, can you share the process?
The Chairperson, it was the Bushiri matter.
Yes.
Okay. Can you put it on the Bushiri? Yes. I'm having a different document here. Yes. Chairperson, as you know, the Reverend Bushiri or Pastor Bushiri, as you know, was arrested. Was arrested by the Hawks for a fraud amounting to 102 million rand, which happened in his church, and he was given bail and put under the care of police to report at the police station three times per week. And you'll remember that during that era, he escaped, and we came here to the portfolio committee many times to account and being asked about that escape. And so I don't have to repeat that. I was just trying to recap. It's not here on my slides. But then the department sat down to finalize, to investigate, because it was found that Bushiri is a permanent resident in South Africa. And we wanted to know exactly how he acquired this permanent residency, how does it relate to the escape, et cetera, et cetera. And we went on to investigate as a Department of Home Affairs, because that is our purview. And we discovered that indeed, the permanent residence documents that Bushiri got them very irregularly. He was not supposed to get them. Certain officials gave it to him in what we believe is a fraudulent scheme. And so we started charging the officials for gross dishonesty, for gross negligence, for non-compliance with the Immigration Act regulations and standard operating procedures. And the disciplinary process has been finalized in terms of which the senior official who was in charge at the level of chief director was dismissed on the 23rd of May with immediate effect, because he was found guilty of gross dishonesty and gross negligence, which, as you know, in terms of labor law, are dismissible offenses. The ex-employee has appealed the sanction with the General Public Service Sectoral Bargaining Council, and the matter is therefore under arbitration. I must explain, Chairperson, this issue, because I'm confessing that it took me by surprise. I don't know about other honorable members. When we charged this official, he tried to stop the DC process. He went to the labor court to try and stop the process of DC against him. He lost. He then appealed. He lost. He then petitioned or appealed again to the labor appeal court. He lost. And the DC process took off. And then he was found guilty of gross negligence and gross dishonesty. The surprising part, which I didn't know before, is that after being dismissed, having tried the labor court, a public servant can still appeal, can still go to start a new process at the General Public Service Sectoral Bargaining Council. I'm confessing that this was news to me. I thought once you go to the courts and you lose, that's where matters end. But I'm told that the General Public Service Sectoral Bargaining Council can also look into the matter afresh, which is what is happening. I'm now not surprised that most of the officials we charge in our labor processes, they prefer that the matter go to the General Public Service Sectoral Bargaining Council instead of a normal process of looking for a chairperson of the disciplinary committee and a presenter of what the charges are. People prefer to go to General Public Service Sectoral Bargaining Council. So I just want to tell you that the matter is there now. But as far as we are concerned, in the department, official has been dismissed. Next. The question here is, what is the timeline of completing the investigation surrounding the issuance of visas to the Bushiris? As I said, it has already been completed. Now, there are four other officials who were placed on precautionary suspension on the 15th to 18th of March 2022 for aiding and abetting in connection with this matter. In other words, while their chief director has been dismissed because he was charged under a different dispensation, these are junior officials. Their DC is currently underway. Most recent sitting was on the 3rd of August 2022. We are waiting for other sittings of the DC, but it's going on. Next. You are aware that this is the last item I'm going to present about the issuance of payments, which was presented to the committee. Now, you are aware that the report recommended that because I'm answering the question about department planning to investigate legal status of foreign land churches in South Africa. I think this is asked because of the Bushiri matter. What about the foreign land churches? Because remember, I also told the committee that after discovering that Bushiri had fraudulent documents, I also heard that Pastor Omotoso, who is on trial in Gqeberha in the Eastern Cape for issues of rape, I also was tipped that his documents are not in order. He also acquired them in a wrong way. So, Chairperson, that's why then the committee came into being to investigate. Now, the committee recommended that we put up a task team comprising investigators, attorneys, data analysts, and system experts, and should be appointed by the department to fully investigate for the purpose of prosecution, internal disciplinary action, deportations of fraudulent immigrants, recovery of proceeds based on this recommendation. Now, this part, Chairperson, is going to help us also on this issue of foreign-led churches. But as you know, I'm going to report about it on the last agenda item. That is number four. So allow me to skip it. Now, the department has initiated the procurement process to that effect. I'll come back at number four, at item number four. Next. I'm supposed to answer a question. Is the department planning to investigate the legal status? No. It's the same thing, Chairperson. Sorry, yes. What we are adding that apart from what is already being done by the department, you'll remember that in 2016, the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of the Right of Cultural, Religious and Linguistic Communities undertook a study inter alia about the impact that foreign-led churches has on ordinary South African citizens. Based on the findings of that commission, LRC Commission, the department amended its legislation to provide for the issuance of visas instead of work visas to foreign religious workers. We did so as a recommendation of the LRC Commission, Chairperson, because in the past, religious workers were coming here through work visas, and they finally, because of that, finally apply for permanent residence in South Africa and do the type of things that, you know, later on Bushiri did. So we are saying they must come only as visitors, but as visitors who can perform work. This change means that there is no avenue available for these religious workers to migrate to permanent residence status. In order to acquire relevant visas for foreign religious leaders, in order to acquire relevant visas, foreign religious leaders must follow due process and meet requirements in terms of the Immigration Act 2002. That's why the law had to be amended, Chair. Thank you. Go on. Now, I'm supposed to answer the question, if the department is aware of the words of Bushiri, of the fact that Bushiri is leaving the country, does not mean they left, does mean that they have left illegally because we could not find anything on the movement control system. If yes, is the department investigating how they could have escaped? I want to confirm, yes, that on our movement control system, we do not see any record of the Bushiris leaving, which means they have left the country illegally. Now, Chairperson, this matter of leaving the country illegally because it's a criminal offense by somebody who was already charged by a court of law. In other words, it's more of an escape from court as much as it's an escape from the country. So for that reason, relevant law enforcement agencies led by the Hawks are dealing with that work. The department does not have access to what is contained in the Hawks investigation report. Because I've tried many times, Chairperson, the Hawks told me point blank that they will never reveal their findings of their investigation on how Bushiri escaped simply because it is part of their presentation in the court of law. And maybe I need to explain this, Chairperson. When Bushiri left, he was in court already, taken by the Hawks for the fraud of 102 million rand. That in itself is a court case. Now that he's escaped, the law say he must be extradited through an extradition order to come back and face that court case. Now, on our side as Home Affairs, we have given him audio alteram partem papers before he escaped in terms of the law, because we want to acquire back our papers, permanent residence. But he also rushed to court, and the court ruled that because he's still going to be charged, they will only deal with their matter on the day he appears in court again on these charges of 102 million. And you know, we are waiting for that. Then there's an extradition process going on, which is done by the Department of Justice. The moment Bushiri lands in South Africa, according to the Hawks, they will continue with their initial case. They will add another case of how he escaped and who helped him escape and by what mechanism those people will be charged. Then our case of acquiring our documents back from him will also be opened by the church. But for now, Chairperson, I'm afraid the Hawks are digging in, that they will never give anybody that information. We'll hear it for the first time, all of us, when it's presented in front of a judge. Thank you. Can you move on? Yes. What are the mitigating factors that the department with other law enforcement are put in place to ensure that all people in South Africa do not escape the country while under bail? Chairperson, we are trying quite a number of things. The South African Police Service has a process whereby people who are granted bail have to hand their passports in, which are then listed on the Home Affairs Movement Control System. In other words, we tick that passport while it has been handed in. In case the passport, by whatever mechanism, most possibly corruption, get into the hands of the owner, at the borders, when they go through, the passport will be ticked. Again, the South African Police Service has access to the Movement Control System risk engine and utilize it for monitoring. When a departure is processed by an immigration officer, the Movement Control System risk engine warns such immigration officer and the traveler if it's wanted and handed over to the SAPS, if the traveler is wanted and hand that over to the SAPS for further processing. Those are the mitigating factors we do. Move on. Now the last question, Chair, before I go to this last question, can you move back again? I want to mention, Chairperson, that all these are mitigating factors, but we would like a situation where the court realizes that if somebody is not from South Africa and they've done an illegal thing, the moment they are released on bail, they will escape because they will definitely escape because they've got a country to run to and because they don't belong to South Africa. We will wish that, but we can't control the court, Chairperson. That's why, for instance, we are, and unfortunately, there is no consistency in what the courts are doing because cases differ from one case to the other. That's why we are happy that the Pakistani national who was arrested in Krugerstorp, you remember, in that sting operation, they refused him bail on the basis that he will escape, but others are being given. And once they are given, they do this type of escape through whatever mechanism they can find. And whatever mitigating factors we have can always be breached. So we believe a clear solution of this matter is that anybody who commits a crime and belongs to another country, it will be better that they don't get paid. But unfortunately, as I said, that matter is in our hands. It's not in our hands. It's in the courts of law by different magistrates and different judges. Thank you. Can we go on? The question we're supposed to answer is various media houses allege that the Bushiris had sent their children to Malawi a few days before they fled South Africa. Was the Department of Home Affairs aware of this? If yes, have they alerted this, the Hawks? Again, Chairperson, the Hawks ask us that this matter be put together with the case of Bushiri's escape and only wait until it's presented in front of a court of law. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister, for the presentations. Members, these are the two presentations that we must interact. There are two issues which are emerging from the presentation for noting. One is that the matter in relation to the exemption of is in court, and I get a sense from the minister that there may not be some of the issues that are brought before the committee, which I think is correct. I just want them to note that for members to note. Secondly, is that minister, we may need to, in a second last presentation that we did, we may need in the next update of this matter in relation to Bushiri, coupled with the presentation that the Minister of Correctional Service has been doing, so that there's a one presentation in relation to the matter in the process that is underway on both the department and the correctional service. I'm raising this point because you are raising that the law enforcement agency, they will only present their final report or progress on the matter to the courts. And if you have followed the presentation of the Minister of Correctional Service, both in his response to Parliament and interaction on this matter, there are certain update process that I think they are carrying. So it will be important that we may need to find a way to perhaps to interact with the Portfolio Committee of Correctional Service, so that one report in terms of the brief of this matter is presented to the committee. I'm just wanted to raise those two points for noting, so that when we move, at least we do appreciate the work that has been conducted. I'm going to invite Honorable Van der Merwe, Honorable Molekwa, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Ramulo Beng, Honorable Khwase, Honorable Tito, Honorable Ross, Honorable Pile, and Honorable Modisimta to interact with the two reports. I'll start with Honorable Van der Merwe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to the Minister, good morning to his team, and good morning to our colleagues. Thank you very much to the Honourable Minister for that presentation. I think it's a very important presentation that we've just had. And, you know, I share, the Minister speaks about how surprised it is that a dismissed official has got the right to appeal to the Bargaining Council. But I'm really surprised that we are not jailing these officials who are selling our country to the highest bidders. And I think I've said it before, what really worries me is this perception that things are not well within the Department of Home Affairs, that officials are guilty of fraud and corruption, and that they're selling our country, our documents, our permits to the highest bidders. And yet we hardly ever hear of anybody going to jail for fraud or corruption. And really for me, it's a worrying state of affairs because things keep going wrong and yet we never see any accountability. And I know as much as the minister has outlined, you know, that they've dismissed some of these officials and we are still going to get a further presentation on this, it is quite worrying. And, you know, on the issue of the Bushiri matter, I know it's out of the minister's hands because now we've got to wait for the Hawks to complete the investigations. But even in that instance, it's a very sad state of affairs that the wheels of justice turn so slowly and that we might never hear who aided and abetted the Bushiris in terms of their escape. I think I want to ask in terms of, we did speak about this previously, about foreign nationals who run churches in South Africa. And the minister did briefly touch on it, but I didn't quite hear what he was saying in that regard. I wanted to know whether we are focusing our attention on some of these churches to establish A, whether all those that are running these churches are here within the country legally, and if they have got permits, work permits, for example, because I think it's something that we spoke about earlier or in one of the previous meetings. On the issue of the Zim permits, I thank the minister for that update. I think I've been really worried by seeing the constant extensions in the media, and I think he's really provided clarity in that regard. But with regards to these two extensions, are we expecting any further delays? In other words, does the minister envisage that the work that needs to be done will not be completed and therefore further delays might occur? Also, is the extension not going to prolong the existing backlog in the applications of visas for other foreign nationals? Currently, there seems to be a big problem within the department that all sorts of permits are taking a very long time to be finalized. And I wanted to know whether this will have an impact on it. I also wanted to ask the minister, I saw in the media recently, he said that this, the visas of Basotho nationals will also be coming to an end. I just wanted to get an update in that regard as well. And then I wanted to focus in general on the immigration crisis in South Africa, and President Ramaphosa did speak about it recently in Parliament. He referred to meetings with counterparts, Nigerian counterparts, you know, some of our leaders in the SADC region met. And I just wanted to ask, what were the outcomes of these meetings? And will some of these meetings that you are having in terms of illegal migration, will you be extending that to other countries? For example, will you be meeting with the leaders of Ethiopia, Somalia, Pakistan, Bangladesh? And I wanted to ask, with regard to these meetings and the outcomes, how are these countries going to assist us with our illegal migration crisis? And then finally, I wanted to ask, and this is maybe a bit of a devil's advocate question, but you know, these permits that are coming to an end, these are Zimbabwean nationals, and I know it was only a temporary arrangement, but these people are currently here in South Africa with permits, and I heard some of them on social media saying that if we bring their permits to an end, they will simply come back to South Africa illegally. And I think that is my greatest concern currently, that we are ending permits of people who are accounted for. And yet it seems to me that South Africa doesn't have a plan, a concrete plan, any plan to deal with the approximately 5 to 10 million illegal migrants that are within the borders of South Africa. And so I think, again, I know we often speak about the Border Management Authority, but we, you know, for me, there seems to be absolutely no clear plan emanating from government, emanating from this department, in terms of how we will deal with the illegal migration crisis that is affecting the safety and security of our country. And yeah, I think I just want to ask again the minister's intervention and ideas in that regard. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Lizelle, for your contributions. Honorable Mulekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also appreciate the minister on the two presentations presented to the portfolio committee. We really appreciate the presentation as been presented. On the first issue, Chairperson, we would like to note the progress made so far in terms of the ZEP matter. However, Chairperson, because of the matter is still a sub judice, we would like to await for the final report after the court decided on this matter. And then I think we'd appreciate once the court has decided so that the minister can brief or report to the portfolio committee on the outcome. On the issue of Busiri fraudulent visa, Chairperson, we also want to acknowledge the work that is done by the minister and the department so far, and also appreciate the fact that most of the issues that were on media were also clarified by the report presented by the minister. We also want to note also the report, and we'll await the outcome of the disciplinary hearing once it has been completed. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Kanyile.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, colleagues. Chairperson, I'd like to take this opportunity and appreciate the presentations that we have received from the Minister. I just have a few questions that I would like to raise. Firstly, to the issue that you have raised about the emails or issues that we are not getting responses to, I'd like to ask the minister to give us the email address that he was referring to that we can also CC him, because we are having a huge amount of emails or queries that we are getting, and when we send them to immigration, we don't get responses. And where we get responses, you find that the status that was given to you about 8 months ago, the same visa or the same application, it still remains in the on the same status. So those are some of the concerns that we are having. Other concerns that we are having, Minister, it is the lack of the sense of agency within the department. I have a case of a gentleman that I was assisting. Apparently, the system of the department picked him up as a non-South African, as an illegal immigrant. So his ID was blocked. That happened in 2018. He submitted his documents and nothing was done until he approached us last year, 2021, around November. So it means it was 3 years later. I submitted the matter to the department. An investigation was done. Around April, I spoke to a gentleman. I think his name is Mr. James. He told me that the investigation was done and they're going to unblock the ID. But sadly, up until August, the ID was still blocked. I'd like to ask Minister to please look into those matters and maybe just ensure that the department has a turnaround time, that once the investigation has been concluded, how much time does it need to take the department to reactivate the ID? Thank you very much. And Chairperson, on the issue of the ZEPs, I do appreciate the clarity that was given to us by the minister, because we have been getting a lot and lots of queries, and it was very difficult for us to address these issues with the members of the community. The minister has indicated during his presentation that the department has received 4,000 visa applications and 6,000 visas, while he has also indicated that we have about 178,000 ZEP holders. I would like to know that going forward, should it happen that the 168,000 people that did not apply for the visa or for the waiver, they do not make any applications, what is going to happen? Number two, are there any plans maybe to deport these individuals, or all of that processes will start to kickstart immediately after we have received the court order, since the matter is in court? And further to that, we've been getting reports from some of the ZEP holders that their bank accounts have been frozen. Can the department give us clarity, or the minister give us clarity, that what is the reason they have frozen those accounts, or if these accounts are going to remain closed until the court finalizes this matter, or if these bank accounts are going to be unfrozen until the period that has been extended has actually lapsed. Chairperson, I think on the issue of Bushiri, I have been covered by Honorable Fanyo Mede, but I would also like to ask a question to the minister, that what are their plans around laying criminal charges against the officials who have been found guilty of a conduct similar to what has transpired in the case of Bushiri? Are there any plans of laying criminal charges, or are we just going to dismiss them and let them off the hook? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kanyile, for your contributions. Honorable Rabunobe. Honorable Lokwase. Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chairperson, and greetings to the honorable members and everyone who is present. I will also like to acknowledge the presentation that was made by the minister. And then, Chair, I only have two questions on the ZEP and also on the suspended staff. I'll start on the suspended staff. What makes up the 6.4 million financial implications of the 32 staff members that were suspended? If they are still being paid whilst on suspension and not working, and I'm sure also the cost is now more. And then on the issue of the ZEP, given the numbers of exemptions and the total cost over the 10 years that was given, each application cost was only around 8,000 rand, and has an estimation been done on the additional cost of VFS services related to the ZEP versus conventional SEDEC visas applications? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tito, for your contributions. Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Minister for the presentation. Chair, first of all, just to touch on the handling of the issues that we receive. I think it's an interesting suggestion by the minister to copy him in on all the emails. I think he's going to get very tired very quickly. There are very many. And we kind of serve as a call center for Home Affairs when persons can't get through. I think one potential thing that we should also consider is that we receive a reference number for each of these inquiries, because some of them fall off the table, and we just don't have the capacity as MPs to track these things. We don't have a CRM system that the call center should have to be able to say the call was locked here, it hasn't been referred, and so forth. So I think we should also get a reference number when these things are escalated. And Chair, I must add that I've personally found that the official who was specifically mentioned at the beginning of this meeting as being unresponsive, I found him to be very responsive and helpful. But I think, if we have reference numbers, if we're able to go back and see all these queries that have gone through the MPs, and that we'll be able to start picking up a picture, hopefully, of who is not responding and how long is it taking for these things to be answered, because now it's all anecdotal. We come every now and then, we say there's not a response, we say it's taking 3 weeks to get an acknowledgement. So I think if it's logged on the whatever CRM Home Affairs has, then we're able to start having these discussions with factual information at our fingertips. Then, Chairperson, in terms of the ZEP, I think in courts, the matter is whether there's a reasonable expectation of permanent residence. So I won't touch on that, Chair. But I think we really need to understand how we got here, Chairperson, and especially when we look at the reasons why this happened. So, Chair, in 2008, there was an influx of asylum seekers, and Home Affairs had no capacity to cope. And really the reason that was then given for this permit is that Home Affairs didn't have a capacity. And so therefore this blanket permit was put into place. But Chairperson, there was a number of reasons for this influx. So it was political violence, it was abductions, torture, and economic factors. So there were a number of different factors that caused persons to come over the border. And when you apply for asylum, then that's part of the consideration, is why exactly are you here? When we have a blanket ZEP or a blanket permit, then it has, you know, it has this effect of grouping everybody into one group with one nationality and one problem. And typically we assign the same motive to everybody that's applied for this. And that motive is economic migrant. But there are those that came fleeing violence, the threat of abduction, being part of MDC, for example, at that time. And the DA and even alliance partners like COSATU and SACP were calling for sanctions and a hardline approach. And that didn't happen. The government went for a quiet diplomacy approach and it didn't work. And this is why people had to flee to South Africa. So we shouldn't be surprised, Chair, if these persons don't qualify for a work permit or they don't apply for it, because they probably don't qualify for a work permit or one of the other ways of being regularized. So I really just have two questions about this decision. And, you know, we're told here that these have always been a temporary measure, these ZEPs, and the pending improvement of the political and economic situation in Zimbabwe. So I want the minister to let me know, has there been an assessment of how many of these persons fled because of violence, torture, for political reasons that caused them to flee over the border to South Africa for safety? And have you satisfied yourself that that danger is indeed no longer there? That if these persons had to go back, they wouldn't be victimized, they wouldn't be rounded up as part of something like that? Because if they had been processed as Section 22, this proper analysis would have had to take place. And now because of the incapacity of the government to process them as they should have, now they've actually lost that right in international law to not be sent back somewhere where that situation of danger has not improved. And then secondly, we talk about budget, Chairperson. So my question to the minister is, has any consideration been given to charging a levy for the renewal of a ZEP permit? And I just use a simple example of what you would pay VFS. So I think it's gone up now, but I just did a calculation on 1,450 Rand times 180,000. And this results over a 10-year period in an amount of 650 million Rand. So we see in the report that the department claims it cost them 188 million over that 10 years. And yet if you had to charge a levy for the renewal of these permits, you could get 650 million Rand in revenue, of which you'd need a fraction to consider them, with the rest of that potentially going to help sort out the visa processing crisis that we have. So I just want to understand, you say you can't afford it anymore. To my mind, there are some simple solutions to that. And I want the minister to just take us through whether that is being considered and if not, why not? Because if we halt all programs that have to do with human rights because of budget, I mean, where's it going to stop? Are we going to get prisoners released from correctional services because correctional services runs out of budget and can no longer afford to feed them? Chairperson, in terms of the suspended senior officials, what I want to know is, you know, in these cases, the officials do not only receive salaries, but they receive their perks that should be used for day-to-day work while they're not working, and they receive bonuses, including performance bonuses. So my questions to the ministry in this regard is, what is being done to speed up the investigations, considering in this report you say that just for those few persons mentioned, it is about a 3 million salary bill over there, and that excludes bonuses and things like that. So is there any budget that gets allocated to speed up the investigation so that if the persons are found guilty, we are not sitting there paying somebody that has been defrauding the department? My recollection of a previous presentation that we had is, I think it's about 540 days on average to process these internal disciplinary processes. So these persons are sitting there on paid leave for a year and a half. The other question is, once found guilty, if the person is found guilty, do they have to pay back any of these performance bonuses and perks? And then from the minister's point of view, I know we have discussed this before, but Minister, in this regard, what would you say to us should be some law reform that we should look at in this regard? So that, because you're going to have a challenge, Minister, of, especially with the permitting investigation of many, many persons on suspension, getting paid bonuses, getting paid with slow investigations taking a year and a half. So what law reform is needed in this regard? How can we help you, Minister? Then in terms of the Bashiri matter, we talk about the senior official that was dismissed for gross dishonesty and negligence and non-compliance with the Immigration Act and regulations. My question is, how can it be that there was no criminal offense involved in this case? And then secondly, that given that the person that was implicated here and that was fired was in a very senior position of issuing permits and clearly abused this position, has this person been implicated in the permit investigation? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ross, for your contributions. Honorable Pile. Honorable Mudisim,
Chairperson?
Chairperson.
Okay.
Pile is speaking, but is muted.
My apologies.
Okay. Proceed, Honorable Pile. Sorry.
Chairperson. Sorry. Can I ask for your indulgence, Chairperson?
Yes, Minister.
Yeah, I noticed that you asked me to make two presentations, and I was hoping that the questions will be based on that. I'm aware already that three members have already asked me about the third presentation that is still going to be made by the DG, the issue of officials who are suspended. I'm not sure whether that's the way it should be, but I'm just worried because we didn't present anything in that regard.
Chair?
No, don't get worried, Minister. Let's allow members to complete their questions. Then we'll invite the department to deal with what they must deal with. Then we'll go to the item that you have requested to present later. Honorable Pile?
Thank you very much.
Sorry, I just wanted clarity before. Sorry, Honorable Pile. When the minister presents on the issue of suspension of staff, will you still allow us to ask questions there? Because I haven't asked my questions in that regard. So I just wanted clarity. The minister is raising an important point.
I'm not sure why Minister Mtswaledi and Co-Chair Honorable Lizelle disrupt their meeting.
And with your permission, can I continue, Chair?
No. I'm trying to assist because sure. We've not completed the issues. I'm fully aware on the issues that are raised. And if you can allow members to present, if we've allowed the first honourable member to raise questions and comment and raise a matter on the last member, it's unfair to the meeting. Let's just appreciate the process and we'll outline how we're going to deal with the matters. Thank you, Honourable. Proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, firstly, I think it's important for me to appreciate and applaud the chairperson for being proactive, particularly in the letter that you've sent to the minister. I think it's important, ultimately, as a committee, we have a responsibility to all South Africans and to society as a whole to improve our services, but also to resolve queries timeously. Chair, I want to also note the progress in respect of charges and DCs, et cetera, and suspensions. And the reason I'm saying this is because of the presentations we received, there are many things that overlap in terms of suspensions. For example, in the Bashiri matter, there has been a dismissal. However, my concern, Chairperson, is around when a staff is suspended, and they are suspended with pay. It also means that their duties and their tasks becomes overloaded on another staff member, or perhaps if there has to be some kind of recruitment for another staff to be able to take over their duties. Now, this, Chair, becomes double expenditure. Chair, I must also note that in respect of queries which you have raised at the beginning of this meeting, and I think other members have also raised it, I have to place on record that there is timeous response from the DG and DDG. In fact, most times the DG responds almost immediately. But what I have found is that the respective section or staff who is responsible for that particular matter, they fail to respond. In fact, they fail to even acknowledge. And you then have to chase up and follow up. And I want to also agree with other fellow members that we have to have some kind of tracking system, but also in terms of a turnaround. Now, imagine if a member of this committee cannot get a response, how then are the ordinary citizens and clients going to be able to get responses on queries? Chair, I must share with this committee that there was one quite frustrating incident which finally got resolved. But the sad reality is that this South African citizen became undesirable due to an overstay. And they are 9 months away before their 5-year expires. And it was only resolved now, that is 9 months before having to have the 5 years completed. And I think that becomes totally unfair. And that South African citizen was not allowed to come back into the country over the last 4 years. In respect of the Bashiri matter, Chair, I think we, as a committee, we applaud and appreciate that, yes, there has been a staff or individuals that are responsible for illegal documents. But my concern is that South Africans are really more worried about how did he leave the country. And while I hear the minister, and it's out of his hands, I have to agree, it's completely out of his hands, the matter is with the Hawks. But I think that this committee and the minister should find a way to be able to appeal and write to the Hawks, because it cannot be that it takes this long for a criminal matter to be finalized. And then also to find out if there's any updates on the request for extradition of the Bushiris to face criminal charges in South Africa. The next one, Chair, is in respect to religious leaders. And I heard through the presentation that they would now be receiving a visitor's permit, but also allowed to work. And I think the important thing there to note is that we are curbing on one coming into the country as a religious leader working and then want to apply for citizenship. And I applaud that that's going to curb it. But just to find out in terms of the duration of a visitor's permit, because sometimes a visitor's permit is limited to a short period of time. What happens if a religious leader needs to be in the country for a longer period of time, e.g. if they are missionaries who often come here for longer times? I must also agree, Chair, that we have a major challenge of illegal documents and fraudulent documents. And I think it's no secret. It's out in the public domain. We've seen it time and time again. But I think there's one simple solution that will help reduce, and I think in terms of reducing these challenges, is if we simply fast track the applications and processes. I think it just cannot be possible. It cannot happen that we take forever to finalize applications. There are people who genuinely apply through the system with all the relevant documents, who apply legally, and it just takes too long for this thing to be finalized and to be able to be processed. And Chair, then to what is being done to address the IT system security. In fact, we found that most issues related to permit and visa fraud is in respect of the IT system. So what are some of the security measures or what is being done to address the IT system in terms of security? And then the last one, Chair, is that in terms of staff that we find involved in different fraudulent activities, I think that there should be an immediate suspension. I just have a challenge that we take too long And the challenge is that when we take too long, it means it gives them the opportunity to do more before we actually clamp down on them. So I think it must be done almost immediately. But overall, Chair, I want to then applaud you and appreciate and also thank the Minister for the sterling work. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Pile, for your contributions. Honourable Mudisim, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Minister, we appreciate and applaud the clarity that you've provided on that EPs. We've mostly in the past been interacting with the issue on media. Therefore, this clarity really does assist a lot. We also take note, Minister, on the action that the department has taken against the officials, hoping that this will send a strong message to others. But one must add that a lot still needs to be done, taking into consideration of the serious challenges that our country is faced with regarding the illegal immigrants or foreign nationals who flock in and out of our country with so much ease. So the department really needs to put strong measures to guard and monitor against these officials who perpetually make it easy for foreign nationals to attain illegal documents, because it can only happen with the aid of officials who are working inside the department. Minister, I just wanted to ask as well, on the dismissal on the Bushiri matter, the person who has been dismissed, has a criminal case being opened outside of the internal processes that have taken place? Has a criminal case against the person opened? And if not, why is it that you don't pursue criminal charges against such members? Lastly, Minister, on the religious people who come to our country, are we able to trace their stay when they've obtained the permits to, or now that you've mentioned that they will be given workers' permits, are we going to be able to trace their stay or on the duration that they've been provided in our country? And are there any laws that you are going to enforce in ensuring that they vacate their country when their duration comes to an end or lapses? Thank you very much.
Thank you. I earlier on called Honorable Ramulo Beng and Honorable Lokhwase. I want to establish if they've managed to join again. Okay. Thanks, members, for your contributions, questions and comments. If there are questions that are going into the next presentation, Minister, you'll talk to those questions when you are presenting when you're giving the presentation. And members will still have to answer questions when you are done with the presentation. So this meeting will be able to deal with both the questions that are arising from the presentation the department has presented to us and responded to. Now I'm going to invite the DM to make comment on some of the issues and get the minister to make comments on the issues raised by members. Then we'll get into the second presentation. If there are issues that the DG or the DDG had to respond, both the minister and the DM will then give that delegation. Deputy Minister.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I just want to deal with three issues. The first one is the issue of the back-end project that we are running, because I can see that there's been quite a number of questions around delays. And in the main, we had identified that we had some delays in the processing of back-end records. And as such, DDG Civics, Mrs. Gama, was then delegated to go and deal with the issue of the backlog. It is currently proceeding very well. And I'm sure in time, we'll be able to respond to the queries even much quicker, particularly the ones that have to do with civic services. The other issue that I thought it's important that we must clarify is that when giving an opportunity to people to apply for certain visas, either than the issue of the ZTP or coming out of the ZTP, was actually a good approach, because you can't have people who will continue to stay in the country under unlegislated visa regimes. Those who are here because they feel that the issue is around being chased away from their countries, either violence or the lack of adherence to human rights, those people are actually should be coming in as refugees, seeking refugee status. So they should be encouraged to actually do so. So it's not as if some people have been, ignored on the basis that they came from their countries under a difficult condition of violence or fleeing their own countries. The other issue that I think we need to deal with at a political level, as also as a committee, is around the issue of adverse drivers, that countries of origin need to be able to identify and deal with the issue of adverse drivers that force people to leave their own countries and go to other countries. We should be taking a posture that says immigration must be voluntary. It must not be forced on people on the basis that the conditions in their own country are driving them away. So other countries who are sending countries do have that responsibility. And the more we talk about it, I think we will be coming closer to the solution of dealing with this immigration crisis that we often refer to. Those are the only few comments I wanted to make, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Minister? Minister?
I'm sorry, I was speaking alone and I was not aware that I'm muted.
Okay, thank you, Minister.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, I said I'll start with the questions by Honorable Van der Merwe, your co-chair. She says people are selling the country to the highest bidder. Honorable member, I actually believe it's to the lowest bidder, not the highest. If you consider the case that is in the news this week, of somebody who has been sentenced for fraud committed in 2017, whereby he was paid only 300 rand to commit that fraud. The court has sentenced him to 5 years in prison, 4 years, but wholly suspended for 5 years, which sometimes maybe encourages people to recommit. Now, that is selling a country to the lowest bidder, not really to the highest, looking at the amount of money. You may remember when we started arresting people, we went to Libombo Border Post, I think it's 2021 early or 2020 late. Yes, we went to Libombo Border Post where we arrested six officials and a Mozambican hawker. One of the officials was a police person and he was paid only 60 rand to do what he was doing. Is it 100 rand or 60, something like that? So that is really selling the country to the lowest bidder. When I address unions, there was a meeting which was called by the then Minister of Public Service and Administration, Minister Ayanda Jojo, early this year. I raised this issue with the unions, that they've got a right to defend their members as they should, just like a lawyer present the client. But I said they must also, as unions, differentiate between ordinary offenses and offenses of selling one's country, because we'll have no country remaining, including the unions themselves. I give that to them. I don't know what's going to happen, because they do sometimes ferociously defend their members when we are about when we start charging them. Now, the second thing, Chairperson, which was subsequently asked by many members, whether we just charge these people for and dismiss them under DC, or whether there are no criminal charges. Chairperson, we hand them over to the Hawks. We finish our processes, dismiss a person, but if there's criminality, we hand over to the Hawks. Like this case of Bushiri, we have dismissed the person in May, but we're still waiting for the Hawks. I might remind this House rather of a case that I repeated many times in this forum, the portfolio committee, of a Home Affairs official who was sent to Namibia in our mission. and we found that she was selling visas to Pakistani national who take their visas and fly through Nairobi airport and route to South Africa. We got that lady, we dismissed her. We dismissed her, but handed over the case to the Hawks. And they, of course, they took a long time, I agree. And when they were ready to arrest her, she died. And I don't want to mention anything more, I'm just informing you that she passed on when the Hawks said they were ready to arrest her. The other thing I want to mention, it looks like our processes, maybe it's because of the load of work, which General Levia mentioned in a press conference a few weeks ago about the number of cases they are dealing with. I'm sure you remember. He gave the public huge number of cases in thousands, which they are dealing with. Maybe it's because of that. So our system seems to be faster than that of the Hawks. You'll remember that this case of 300 rand for which a person was charged recently was committed in 2017. Obviously, you can calculate from 2017 to now, it's almost 5 years that they've been on the case. So even after we have dismissed a person, their cases with the Hawks are still outstanding. The issue of churches, yes, I think we've outlined exactly what we are trying to do. And if we get anything, we'll come and report to the committee further. The issue of further delays to the ZIM permit, yes, there are people who are worried that this is a further delay, but as I'm saying, the people who advise me are the people who are going to do the work. And whether the extension of Zimbabwean permits won't increase the backlog. Remember, Chairperson, the team of Lubisi, together with 6 senior counsel from the private sector who are not working for the state, is specifically to remove this from the normal processes of the department. Yes, we are not going to follow normal process. We are putting a special team and a special process which they will deal with. So the normal backlog will be dealt with in a normal way, but these ones are doing a specific job. And the question of Basotho, yes, if we have decided that the Zimbabwean permit cannot be temporary forever, the same will apply to Basotho permit. And I know people have raised it that no, we're only targeting Zimbabweans, but the Basotho permit is only expiring the end of December 2023, not now. Now, it will be wrong for us to show people that we are not targeting any particular nationality to go to Basotho and start traveling them when they are still on permits that legally have not yet expired. The Zimbabwean permit expired on the 31st of December 2021. The Basotho permit expire in December 2023. This is because they were issued at different times. They were not issued at the same time. Now, the outcome of our meetings with neighbors and countries, Chairperson, is difficult to say. There's no neighbor or any country who doesn't agree that we need to deal with the issue of illegal migration. There is none. They all agree. But the question is whether they end up helping. For instance, when I went to Bait Bridge early in 2020, just before COVID, and when I discovered that there was a problem which was given to us by the South African Defense Force about the soldiers over the other side helping people to cross illegally, the generals in the army met their counterparts in Zimbabwe who agreed that that is wrong, they'll clamp it down. The question is whether they'll do it. Now, at the time when there were people holed up in the church, in the Methodist Church in Cape Town, I called ambassadors of the countries where they come from to sit with them. The ambassador of DRC came, the ambassador of Burundi came, the ambassador of Ethiopia came, the others did not come at all, regardless of the fact that there were invitations. The ambassador of DRC said he accepts and understands our situation, but is unable to help because he also is regarded by those people as a persona non grata, regardless of the fact that he comes from their own country. They don't listen and obey to what we say. I have met the new ambassador to the DRC recently, and he said he was shocked that people are running away from his country, because as far as concerned, apart from those who are running away from the war in Eastern DRC, the others, he doesn't know what they are running away from, because President Tshisekedi has actually announced that people who have run away must come back home and nothing will happen to them. So he said he will try to find time to meet them. And I don't know whether they will treat him in the same way as his predecessor. The other thing, Chairperson, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees once complained to me that there is provisions under United Nations Convention where people can go home via voluntary repatriation. That means they are not deported. They go away. They go home on their own. At the time he was talking to me, there were about 900 people who wanted to go home. And he was saying the process is that the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, the International Office on Migration, must work together with the ambassadors of those countries for such a repatriation. And he was saying many ambassadors are not budging at all. They are simply not budging. And he was asking if we could help as a government to show them they should budge. On the 25th of January this year, I raised the matter with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, Deputy Commissioner for Protection. I raised this matter. If you remember, we even issued a press statement whereby among the six things that were agreed upon was that they, as United Nations, will convene ambassadors of countries, especially on the continent, to ask them to please start taking responsibility for their nationals. That's exactly what... Chairperson, I see on the screen that I'm asked to start my video. Is that a request or what? I'm seeing it on the screen.
No, proceed, Minister. Proceed, Minister, with the...
Yeah, okay, Chair, okay. Yes. So we are still waiting for that meeting from the United Nations to bring together ambassadors so that they must know where they are responsible and what they can do, because the United Nations said they'll impress upon them. The issue of people mentioning bravely that if we don't give them permits, they'll still come back illegally. Honorable Van der Merwe, we hear that a lot. When we went to Musina to launch border guards, just as I was about to enter Bait Bridge, the SASM was broadcasting from the venue in Bait Bridge where we were going to launch the cohort of 200 border guards. A gentleman phoned and sarcastically saying this is nothing, it's a waste of time. He has always been transporting people illegally in South Africa, 3,000 of them every month. And he said he has been bribing the police. He will just bribe them again. He will just bribe the border guards as he was bribing the police, and nothing will change. I immediately rushed to SAFM to respond to that, that we dare him, we will see, because there is a belief that, yes, entering South Africa is just going to go on doing like that forever. Remember, that's the reason why we came with the border guard situation. And it's still very early days, because the 200 is just a droplet in the ocean. We are discussing with Treasury about increasing the number. Fortunately, the Minister of Finance have come to understand how expensive is it for the country not to finance the activities at the borders. And he has promised almost every time I meet him that he is going to help. So we believe it's still early days, but something has started. And because you also ask about whether you have got plans. Remember, Chairperson, we also said the people who are already in the country illegally, it is the work in terms of the law, the Immigration Act, of immigration officers to search for them and deport them via Lindela or directly if it is in less than 48 hours. Now, that group of people, there are very few of them. Treasury has given us money, as you remember, and we reported to this committee. We are busy hiring about 200 of them, the immigration officers. We also, in our annual plan, reported to you that we used to do about 240 operations per annum. We are now doing 540. We have almost doubled them. And we gave a program that we are going to go to the farms, the factories, the trucking industry, looking for people who are there illegally, because the problem of illegality is not only by individuals, it's by employers. I'm sure you have heard that from the Minister of Labor recently. There are employers who deliberately hire illegal people, specifically because they want to oppress them in what I call a modern day slavery, where people work for very little wages or no wages at all, as it's happened in the hospitality industry, where you find that the only wage that a person earns are the tips given by clients, not the employer who has employed them, being employed just to collect tips and not a salary. These are some of the things we're dealing with. We are discussing with the Department of Labor to up their game in this regard, because we believe there's nowhere in South Africa of today of democracy other people can become slaves, even if they come from other countries. It can't be, and we can't allow that. So that's why we are putting up plans to deal with them. Honorable Kanyile, yes, I'll make sure that through the CLO, you receive the email address where you CC me whenever you are sending inquiries. The issue of lack of sense of urgency. Well, we're trying our best. Officials are not the same. Now, I want to deal with this issue of blocking of IDs. Honorable Chair, when I arrived in Home Affairs, I found this concept of blocking of IDs. And I wanted to know, under what act is it done? And I discovered that there is no act anywhere in the country that says somebody's ID must be blocked. It's just Home Affairs officials panicking. When they discover that somebody is fraudulently in the country, has got a South African ID, they get scared that that person may commit other crimes using the ID that is impaired while they are still investigating. Then they rush in and block it. But unfortunately, the Act does not provide for that. And I've really told officials many times not to do it. But I found that there are IDs that have been blocked long ago, as it is this one mentioned by Honorable Kanyile. The right procedure is not to block an ID if you are convinced that it was obtained fraudulently. The right procedure is to write to that person in terms of the laws of the country, like we did to Bushiri, an audio alteram partem letter, and say they must give reasons why their documents cannot be retrieved by the DG. After that, the DG retrieves the document. It's not blocking. You are just taking it away. You are taking what is yours back because it was obtained fraudulently. That is the normal procedure, but Home Affairs have been taking a shortcut of blocking, and we do unblock them because we can't encourage, even though what is motivating them seems to be good, but we have got to be a department that works under the law. The question of if the E holders don't make application, what will happen? I think we're leaving the matter to them. We are giving them opportunity. If they don't apply, it's up to them. Remember, if you don't apply for a particular visa or permit and you are found in South Africa, you are illegal. So the matter, the ball is in their court. It's not in the court of government. We'll just deal with them in the same way that we deal with anybody who is found illegal in the country. Just like people who have overstayed, there is a punishment for that. Even when they came with official papers, official passport, and official visas, if they overstay, they are regarded as illegal. But because we can't keep them in the country, when they go away, there is a punishment levied for that. The question, Honorable Kanyile, why people's accounts are frozen. If you look at the directives, the one I issued in December, on the 29th of December 2021, and the one I issued on the 2nd of September 2022, we are actually explaining what should not happen. We are telling that to law enforcement agencies. The banks were even communicated to by the DG. If you gave somebody a bank, you opened a bank account as a bank, to somebody on the who's on the ZEP. If the ZEP has not yet expired, you are not supposed to be freezing anybody's account. It shouldn't be happening. And that's why we're issuing these directives and we're issuing government gazettes for the banks to understand. So it is just a practice that is done by the banks. It's not within the law. I don't know whether banks have got a prerogative to do their own things in their own manner. But the reason that we issue this directive is to show that you may only do that after the total expiry of the permit. If it's extended, you can't freeze accounts. And we have communicated to the banks. As I'm saying, what I'm not sure about is the power they have, because it looks like banks have believed that they've got the right to open an account with another, with anybody, and close them as they wish. I'm not sure whether that matter has been resolved legally or not. It's a matter outside the realms of Home Affairs. The issue of laying criminal charges, yes, I've already said so, Chairperson. Most of the people who have fired, we do lay criminal charges against them, and we are waiting for the hawks. The question by Honorable Tito, suspended staff members, what makes the 6 million? We'll answer it when we come to that topic, Chairperson. Is still coming on. And the additional cost of VFS. Chairperson, I'm very surprised why this question is asked all the time. All over the world, there are costs. Even inside the country, there are costs. When you apply for an ID, when you apply for a passport and all that, there are costs involved. And it happens in every part of the world. When you apply for certain papers on immigration, there are costs involved. And that we can't run away from that. No state has got the capacity to pay for costs for individuals when they want certain documents, when they want visas and all that. It is just like that all over the world, Chairperson. And the money paid to VFS is not ours. VFS is offering a service that will expedite somebody who wants payment. So when they pay VFS, not us. The VFS does not take them, bring the money back to us. No, they are running a business. It's more or less what we did at the borders when we were overwhelmed by people during COVID. We called in private companies to help to do the rapid antigen test. It was not a tender. It was a business of the private company who will test and get paid by the individual who want to enter South Africa or other countries for that matter, because all countries were doing that. And that money doesn't come to government. The only money that comes to government is if the test is done by National Laboratory Health Services. Now VFS is not working for the state. And remember, it's an international company, visa facilitation system. It facilitates visas all over the world, and it gets paid by individuals who want to get such visas. Then, Honorable Ruos, you, among the issues you raised was the issue of people who have taken us to court because of expectation that they've been here for a long time, but also because they don't want to go back because they'll be persecuted. Now, Honorable Ruos, I will be surprised. You get a Zimbabwean exemption permit, but when you arrive here, you said you are an asylum seeker, you are running away from your country. We receive people from all over the world who say they are running away from their country. They are all processed in terms of the United Nations Convention of 1951, the United Nations Protocol of 1967, and the Organization of African Unity, now AU, of 1969, but also through the domestication of those conventions through the Refugee Act of 1998, rather, the South African Refugee Act. That's how we deal with these people. But now, because of the issues Honorable Ruos have mentioned in 2008, we gave the Zimbabwean extension permit. Now, here is the question. We have got, we are aware, rather, and I must emphasize we are aware, that many people, since they got this exemption permit, they've been going home every Good Friday, every Christmas, every time they get an opportunity, they go home. But now, how do you go home on a visit and come back and say, I don't want to go there because I'll be abducted, when you have actually been going? That process in terms of the United Nations Convention is called re-availment. When you are an asylum seeker or you are a refugee, you have been given refugee status, that is Section 24 permit, or you are still an asylum seeker, that's a Section 22 permit. You don't re-avail yourself to the country where you run away from. You don't even visit their embassy. You don't even visit their home. That is international law, it's not us. That is why, Honorable Ruos, the gentleman from Pakistan, who we caught in a sting operation in the Kruger Stop office, many of them, the people he was giving IDs, including himself, are not illegal in South Africa. They are very much legal as asylum seekers. They came here, they say they want to apply for asylum. But because it is not true that they ran away from their country, they are just abusing the system. They then want to go back home. And they know in terms of asylum laws, if they go back home, in terms of the convention, they free avail themselves to a country where they are supposed to run away from. So what they do is to get South African passports and live two lives. The life of being in South Africa as an asylum seeker who's needing international protection from a regime back home that is torturing them, but they also want to live a life of being able to go back to their country. That is now cheating, Chairperson. And we know that that is happening, and we are clamping down on it. The Honorable Ruos, I'm happy together with Honorable Pile. I was getting very discontent when you mentioned the name of an official here who you say is not responsive. He is an acting DDG of immigration. I must say, ever since he came here, developed a plan to deal with backlogs. I found him to be very responsive. I thought it was very unfortunate that some found him not to be. But the gentleman, I don't really want to praise fish for swimming, but I found him having brought some fresh air into the department in the manner in which he's dealing with the issues of immigration. If there is any weakness, we'll go and correct it. But I really don't want a person to be condemned, because that will discourage them. For those honorable members who have found him not to be responsive, I'll really plead with you to give him some bit of extra time. He does have plans, and I'm very happy about those plans, because I've seen the backlog actually moving, Chairperson. And remember, Chair, the backlog we are having, it's not for people who are applying for asylum. It's not. Or who are applying for refugee status. It's not. And we've even reported that to United Nations when they gave us 143 million rand. The backlog is for those who are appealing, because the appeal process in South Africa is unending. We call it a blue sky approach. You know, the blue sky has got no end. I met this problem when I was in health on forensic pathology services, when on toxicology services rather. When somebody has been poisoned and they are looking for a poison, I found that South Africa is adopting a blue sky approach when other countries don't. Other countries mention there's 100 poisons that are common and they investigate them. If they don't find the cause of death there, they close the case. In South Africa, we search and search and search. We are doing the same in immigration. That's why we want to change the immigration laws, because people go through all these appeal processes. When the appeal process are over, remember, they appeal to bodies that are statutory, the Refugee Appeals Authority of South Africa and the SCRA, Standing Committee on Refugee Affairs, not a parliamentary standing committee, but Standing Committee of Refugee Affairs. They are all statutory bodies. They appeal to them, and it takes time. Once they finish, they can go to an open court and open a case from the beginning. Those we believe are serious weaknesses that are causing us all these serious backlogs. Now, the United Nations has given us 143 million over the next 4 years to hire 36 lawyers instead of the 5 that we're having under RASA, 36 more lawyers to try and deal with the backlog and finish it in 4 years. So those are some of the things that we are doing. But South Africa must deal with this blue sky approach because it doesn't work. Whether we have assessed any torture situation in Zimbabwe, I think I've already answered this question, that most of the people who claim that they are being tortured. For instance, quite a number of ministers who served under President Mugabe are here applying for asylum. Many of them have already been rejected. There's no reason. When you talk to Zimbabwe and ask them whether they are being persecuted, they get surprised. So it's very difficult because sometimes persecution can just be a perception of an individual or an individual using it to get away from the country and enter another country. But we are aware, as I'm saying, that some of those individuals go home quite often and come back here and cry persecution when they've actually been there and nothing happened to them. Others tell us that they've got no families back in Zimbabwe because they've been here or back in the country where they come from, not only Zimbabwe. But if you go to Port Health and look at the chief director of Port Health, they will show you a list of people who die in South Africa and are buried in the neighboring countries because it's Port Health that gives them the documents, not Home Affairs, to go and be buried there. And many of them are buried in country of origin. If you have got no home there, who then buries you? Because this thing happens almost on a weekly basis. Many people who are not South Africans who are here don't want to be buried in South Africa, except those who are given proper status. So that's why there is a very big business of transporting bodies out of South Africa to the neighboring countries by people who have claimed that they've got no home there. But they get welcomed there and they get buried. These are some of the things that we discover. The issue of speeding up investigation. Yes, we are doing that. And Honorable Ross, you have asked about law reforms. Definitely, law reforms are wanted in the country. That has also been a recommendation by the Lubisi Review Committee when they've seen that the manner in which our visas are being abused. They, if you remember when they presented to you on the 14th, they've recommended that we do a review of our immigration laws because there are areas where there are weaknesses, like somebody being given a retirement visa at the age of 16. And when you ask officials, they say it's not indicated in the act at what time people must retire. The retirement age of 60 or 65 years is a South African one. It's not in the Immigration Act. So that's why we need to change and do some law reforms, and we are definitely busy with that. The official who was dismissed for Bushiri's issues, yes, we have given it to the Hawks. Even now when he's appealing the dismissal, the Hawks have got the case. The issue of the committee writing to the Hawks, committee members, I think it's within your right to do so. But for us in Home Affairs, I can tell you we have tried. I've had meetings with the head of the Hawks, General Libia, trying my best to show him that I'm under pressure from Parliament to disclose how Bushiri escaped. As I said earlier, I'm repeating, I think for the third time, he is adamant that he's not going to release that information to anybody. Whether he will release it to Parliament, that's what I cannot answer. The issue of duration of visitors for religious leaders, now that they are coming, no longer working under work visa, I will leave that to Mr. Simons. Yusuf, please answer that one. Is within your purview of work. And the last issue, Honorable Modise Mja, is about whether we can trace the religious leaders. Yes, we are intending to do so, Chairperson. We are intending that once they are given this permit, they must be traced. It's difficult to trace other people who come here with documents and just disappear into the niche, but most of the religious leaders have got churches that they are running openly and publicly. We'll be able to trace them, as we have seen, even with those who came with fraudulent documents. They can't hide. You can't hide the church service. You can't hide the church. So it will be very easy to follow them up. Thank you, Chairperson. Can Yusuf just answer this question on the duration of permit for religious leaders, even those who are missionaries? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Minister. Mr. Yusuf?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Minister, Deputy Minister, DG. Just a one question on from Honorable Pillay on the visitor's visa now to religious leaders. The big change, and I think that's what Honorable Pillay was indicated, that previously religious leaders could apply on work permits or visas and then ultimately apply for permanent residency. Now with these visitors' visas, they don't have the option to apply for permanent residence. They will remain as temporary residents within the country. Those visas are issued for a period of 3 years, maximum period of 3 years, and it can be extended. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Yusuf. Minister, you can get into the third presentation, and members will raise, if there are any follow-up to raise, members will be allowed also to raise when the question times or comments arise from members. Minister?
And I think it's the progress on the dismissed or DC officials who are suspended and dismissed and going through a DC. I'll leave that one to the DG.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chairperson. Mozi, if we can flight the presentation. Chair, I'll request permission from your side to turn off the video. The connectivity is a bit erratic. I'll then start with the presentation, Chair. So the presentation starts with the status report on disciplinary matters. If we can move to the next slide. Thank you so much, Mozi, Chair and Honorable Members. I think, Chairperson, this slide basically gives an indication, and I think in the process I'll also respond to issues that have been raised by Honorable Members with regards to DC matters. The fact that the department chairperson takes consequence management quite serious, we've also included, you will note, this target in the annual performance plan. And we've also indicated in the APP that they will endeavor to conclude. I know that some of the honorable members have asked this question, why some of the DC matters take longer. In the APP, we have said we hope to conclude most of these matters within 90 working days from the date on which the disciplinary charges are preferred. And the Minister did indicate in his presentation with regards to the Bushiri matter that in certain instances, we go beyond the 90-day period because officials challenge the process, the appeal, including the matter that the minister referred to where the chief director appealed right up to the appeals court. And those matters, in terms of the schedule of the courts, are not within our control. They are enrolled in the courts as and when the courts deems it fit. So that leads to delays. So the second part of the area that's highlighted in green gives an indication in terms of misconduct cases, charges that were issued. And this is for the period 1st April 2022 to the 31st of July 2022. 18 of those charges were issued. There were 6 cases that were finalized. There are cases that are still pending. These are 12 cases, Chairperson, and they relate mainly to your level 6 officials. In the main, the majority of these are misconduct cases that relate to the fraudulent issuance of permits. As you know, since the incident in Krugersdorp, we've been working with other law enforcement agencies besides the internal process to pursue some of these individuals. Amongst others, it's mainly areas related to irregular late registration of births. Then there's also irregular or unauthorized payments, irregular issuance of or processing of passports, irregular printing of birth certificates, and of course, irregular processing of travelers. This will include the ones that I'm referring to as the 12. And then crucial in terms of the passports, there are also those that are facing misconduct charges for the irregular photo swap that the minister spoke about when they visited Krugersdorp. So that's with regards to the top part of this slide. Now, as of the 26th of August 2022, Chairperson, there are 32 officials in total that have been served a precautionary suspension. And these, amongst them, include the four officials that are related or are connected with the Bushiri matter. They are DC, it's set for the 26th, 27th and 30th of September. And then there's additional days that the chairperson has included, the 25th, 26th and 27th of October. This is amongst the 22. Now, the top part of that slide then gives an indication of the precautionary suspensions, those that have been served, and the salary levels. So salary levels refer to the following. Level 15, that's a DDG position, Deputy Director General. And then level 14, that's the Chief Director position. Level 13, that's a Director position. And then level 10, that's Assistant Director. And then level 8, that's your senior admin officers, and then the bulk of them are admin officers. These are some of those that were involved in the matters related to the either the adjudication in the Bushiri matter, and of course those that were are involved in the passport related issues. So total cases 32. Of course there are financial implications, about 6.4 million. And there are reasons why we can't allow them to be present at the workplace. Amongst others, that's why it's called a precautionary suspension. We are of the view that in certain instances, people might tamper with systems. In certain instances, we have the view that people will also tamper with witnesses. That's why they're then placed on a precautionary suspension. Honorable Rose then asked, how are we speeding up these investigations? By way of responding to that question, Chairperson, on the 27th and 28th of July this year, there was a training for labor relations practitioners, including those from the provinces, who were trained about 50 HR practitioners on grievances and how to handle issues around the discipline. And which means that there's now added capacity within HR to deal with these cases speedily. But in addition to that, Honorable Ross, we also have appointed 18 law firms to assist. And you will note that some of the matters that we have dealt with were finalized quite speedily so that we don't incur a lot of financial implications. Now, below, there's an indication of the other cases that we'd like to speak to. And we have classified them in terms of the nature of the case, the salary level, and the status where that matter is. The first one, it's a pre-dismissal. Pre-dismissal means basically we're having a hearing outside the department. This hearing is being conducted by the General Public Service Sectoral Bargaining Council, or GPSSBC. And that's where that matter is. It's taken a bit longer because, again, the official was challenging some of the processes. And with regards to this, why it's called a pre-dismissal, it's because the department is pushing for a guilty verdict, which we believe will lead to the dismissal of this official. This is an official that's in the Directorate Law Enforcement, the permitting area. Then the second one, which is under review for a chief director, it's at the labor court. It's taken longer. As well, it's a matter that we continue to be seized with. And then the last one, the minister spoke about this one with regards to the chief director at permitting, taking the matter again to the GPSSBC. And then the other dismissal, Chairperson, we issued a statement a few weeks ago with regards to the chief director responsible for information systems, to the extent that there are instances where we had procured even switches and routers that we committed to before the portfolio committee, and only found later that some of those were not installed to ensure that we address issues around the downtime of systems. So that's with regards to that matter. I think the minister has spoken extensively with regards to the other dismissal of the official who was involved in the violation of the immigration laws, which were flouted and led to the man of God, or Pastor Bushiri, acquiring his South African permanent residents. So that matter is before arbitration. If we can move to the next slide. The next slide then deals with the suspension of members of the senior management service. This is your SMS members, and the period there is as at the 31st of July 2022. At Home Affairs, we have 140 senior management members. Out of that 140, as of the 31st of July 2022, Chairperson, six of them have been placed on precautionary suspension, pending investigations, and of course, disciplinary action arising out of acts or allegations of misconduct. And of course, in the main, the suspensions were informed by either acts or allegations of misconduct. The first one, it's three SMS members. This includes the chairperson, the deputy director general responsible for HR. That includes the chief director at the HR responsible for labor relations, and then of course the director at HR as well responsible for labor relations. To the extent that in certain instances where we've had the court orders, these were not honored, which led the department suffering financial losses. And then the second one speaks to cases of assault, two SMS members, one at head office and one in the province of Limpopo. And the third one is with regards to the issuing of unlawful instructions regarding permit applications and appeals. The minister spoke about the Lubisi report. This is flagged in that report. There's an SMS member that's been placed on suspension with regards to that matter. So already, Chairperson, even before the multidisciplinary committee is appointed, we have already started acting on some of those activities. Now, of course, as the suspensions are precautionary in nature, these officials are therefore suspended with remuneration, and the financial implications just for the SMS members amount to 2.8 million. To ensure that there's business continuity, acting appointments have been made, or we've reassigned other officials and functions. The status and the stage date of completion of each date. In the next slide, Mosi, if we can move on, Mr. Salmon, then gives an indication in terms of where we are with regards to some of these cases. So on this slide, Chairperson, on your left, it will be the branch or the province where the matter is from, and then the salary levels divided into salary level 13, director 14, chief director and 15, and the duration. One of the questions that was asked was why does it take so long, and then the status. And then on your extreme right, we have indicated the envisaged date of completion of the hearing of the investigation. The first one in the DG's office, it's the director. That person has been on suspension for a month, 23 days. That disciplinary hearing is in progress. We hope to conclude this matter by the 30th of September this year. And then with regards to the DDG, HR, that matter has been going on for 7 months, 11 days. And now I'm glad to report that that disciplinary hearing is in progress, and we hope to conclude that matter by the end of next month. The second one is with regards to the chief director, ongoing for 7 months, but that hearing is in progress. Again, we hope to conclude this by the 31st. And then the other matter related to the director, we hope to conclude that by the 30th of November. Now, I've already indicated the challenges where people challenge the processes, they challenge the appointment of the chairperson, they challenge the appointment of the initiator, which leads to delays. And in most instances, chairperson, the chairs that chair these DCs are normally appointed, because in most instances, given the fact that it's senior management services, we get them appointed through the state attorney's office. And of course, there are delays with regards to that. And then the immigration matter that I spoke about earlier on, there's one person, that investigation is in progress, and we hope to conclude that matter by the end of this month. And then, of course, the matter with regards to assault, we hope to conclude that matter by the 30th of November. It's because that official, amongst others, has lodged a grievance against the DG, so we need to allow that process to unfold. That's with regards to the suspension of members at the senior management level. If we can move to the next slide, which will speak to the status report on a dispute for the period 1st April 2022 to the 31st of July 2022. Matters for conciliation, so there were five received. All of them were finalized, so there's nothing pending under conciliations. Arbitration, there's 29, only three were finalized, and pending is 26. So these are matters that are before the GPSSBC, and there are mainly two reasons why there's delays. One is the unavailability of the commissioners that need to preside over these matters. The second one is the unavailability of witnesses. And of course, labor representatives or any other representatives that need to be part of the process. Then we then deal with the issues in terms of disputes in court matters. In court, there's none.
Hi, Chairperson.
Mr. Matonzi?
I'm not sure. I can't hear the DG anymore.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, I saw the DG. Are you still on the line? We have lost
If Mr. Mavuzo can finish, because this is the last slide.
I may not... Let me check with the minister. Maybe you'll delegate.
No, Chairperson. The DG was cut off when he has finished this slide.
Oh, okay.
I think we can move on. He will help answer our questions. Yes.
Okay. Is there any other presentation, Minister, or we can go to questions?
No, there is the last one. You remember on the review of permits.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Proceed, Minister.
Yeah, can you put it on this? Yes, Chairperson, can you put it on slideshow, please? Slideshow, as we have done before. Mr. Matonzi, slideshow.
Minister, it's Adam who just put this one now. Adam, can you put it on a slideshow?
It is. Just give it a few seconds. There might be a delay in the network.
It's not.
From my side, it's showing. Just give it a few seconds.
Okay. If you are failing one slideshow to save time, can you go back to the beginning of the presentation? Because I believe...
Okay, I'll just stop and reshare.
Chairperson, Minister, I think I got cut. I was at the last slide.
Yeah, we've already...
We've noted that, DG. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Yes,
you can proceed,
yeah, Chairperson.
Minister.
Yeah, Chairperson, this is the report on the progress we made since the 14th of July when Dr. Lubisi came to report to the Portfolio Committee about their findings. If you remember, the main recommendation, main one, but among others, is that a multidisciplinary task team be appointed to take forward the findings of the committee. And they clearly said the task team must consist of experienced senior counsel, forensic investigators, data analysts, and other related skills. This, Chairperson, is because they set a deep dive investigation, which may end up in preparing dockets. In other words, that issue I've mentioned about criminal cases, dockets might have to be prepared. They might have to develop plans to trace people, they might have to prepare documents to for possible disciplinary cases. They might have to go to court to recover government documents obtained fraudulently. I've already told you, Chairperson, that sometimes you discover that somebody got your documents fraudulently, but they rush to court and the court block you because our officials may not be experienced on how to deal with the court. So the senior counsels are going to help us in that regard. And where appropriate, we might need to trace people who need to be deported. That's why you need all these experience skills. Now, Chairperson, these type of skills are not really found ready-made. We had to sit down as a department, develop terms of reference on how we are going to acquire all these skills that are here. Because, Chair, if we were to go out and hire senior counsels, I'm sure you may argue that there are many, we'll get them. If we look for forensic investigators, there are a few in the country. If we look for data analysts, there are even fewer, much, much fewer than you can ever think. If they come separately, they won't be able to work together. So the approach we are following is that any group or company that brings them must bring them as a package. In other words, they must come and say, we've got so many senior counsel, so many forensic investigators, so many data analysts, so many people of other related skills. We are presenting them to me, to you, department. If we have to hire them individually, I can tell you we'll never go anywhere. So that took a long time, and we finalized. The bid adjudication committee has set, and I think we are about to go out on request for proposals to hear who can offer what in this regard. And I want to remind you, these are very scarce skills and they are doing something that has never happened before in the country. So it might be having some teaching problems. Next slide. Next slide, Adam.
My slide is showing the next slide.
No, but I don't see it here on the screen.
Okay, I'll have to stop sharing and reshare again. Sorry about that.
Yeah. On the 2nd of August, Chairperson, the Ministerial Review Committee presented the findings to the department. Remember, on the 14th of July, it was to yourself. Officials in the department who are working for Home Affairs just listened to this document through the media or through parliamentary processes. So 2 weeks after their presentation, we said, please come to the department as Ministerial Review Committee. Sit with officials, some of which will be involved in the implementation. And that's what happened on the 2nd of August. That report provided for 25 matters that need to be investigated. In other words, they didn't just say, put up a multidisciplinary team. They actually isolated 25 matters that needs to be dealt with. Each matter for investigation had a date linked to it on what must happen. The department, together with the Ministerial Advisory Committee, met again on the 24th of August to discuss the implementation plan. That means the plan on how these 25 matters are going to be dealt with. In the meantime, some of the Home Affairs officials who have been fingered are already going through DC processes of other matters which are but related to some of the findings of the review committee. I'm sure the DG has already shown you that even before we get the multidisciplinary team, we have found it possible to start charging some of the officials because they are linked to other issues. For instance, some of those who are linked to the Bushir matter are also linked to the findings of the review committee. And so there's no need to wait for the deep dive because we have already got that information. Next. Adams, I'm not sure why this is behaving like this, where every time you have to sit off and come back again.
Adams, sorry, Minister Adams, it appears the problems on your side.
From my side, this is the last of the two slides on the progress update.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, so I think he's right. The last slide is thank you, because Chairperson, we are definitely here where we are. In other words, 25 meters to be investigated, a plan developed on the 24th, some officials already being charged, and the tender will go out to get this multidisciplinary team. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, members. Sorry, Mr. Adams, I thought the presentation is still going on. Thanks, members, and the minister, the DG, for this last two presentations. We're going to invite the members in that sequence to comment if there are other issues which they could not be raised or follow up. Honorable Lizelle has raised a matter in the middle. Also, we can raise those issues again, Minister. We're going to invite Honorable Van der Merwe, Honorable Molekwa, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Tito, Honorable Ross, Honorable Pile, and Honorable Modise Mza. I'm noted that Honorable Lukwase and Honorable Lukwase has a network problem, and Honorable Ramulo Beng has joined another committee. Coacher?
Yes, and thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much again to the Minister and the DG and his team, and my apologies for interrupting you earlier. It was not my intention. I was just not clear about the way forward. Chairperson, I actually wanted to say thank you to the Minister for making sure that going forward there will be some type of tracking system in order for us, or a reference system or an email address that we will be able to use, because I do want to agree with our colleagues, and I think I did say so in my budget speech as well, that we as members of parliament is actually, we now extensions of the Department of Home Affairs. In other words, we work as admin officers, because we get so many queries on a daily basis, and unfortunately it becomes quite overwhelming and one loses track of all the issues that one has to follow up. And so we do need to find a better way of dealing with some of these issues. I've also got a bit of a concern with regards to the explanation that was given with regards to visitors' visas for religious leaders. The answer was given that these religious leaders will be able to apply for a visitor visa that can be for 3 years maximum, but it can be extended. And so for me, that really doesn't solve any problem in my mind, because religious leaders will still be here in the country, and I'm sure they'll still be making money in some way or another. So for me, this is really not a solution. And again, I think the question that I asked earlier, it was the fact that we've already got churches being run by people who are not in South Africa legally. And so so even though there's now a different approach, what will be done to ensure that those who are already here are either checked whether they've got any documents, or then make sure that they apply for this new visitor visa, or then is deported. And again, I don't always get an answer when I ask about, you know, already with regards to the immigration system, so many people have fallen through the cracks. We keep on talking about people who are within the borders of South Africa, who have come here claiming asylum, but they're not genuine asylum seekers. We talk about people who are in possession of fraudulent documents, whether it's fraudulent IDs or passports or visas or birth certificates. And I don't hear a response to how do we ensure that those people are either deported or those documents are removed. But maybe that is a discussion we can have on a more serious basis with the minister and his immigration team through some type of indaba or workshop or something at a later stage. And then with regard to the suspensions of officials, I think in one of the DG says in one of the slides that one disciplinary hearing has been taking 7 months and 11 days, and it will be heard now in September or October. And really, I think it is taking far too long, and hopefully now, as they are saying, that there will be ways and means of dealing with it. But I want to ask, at some point I recall in May of 2020, this portfolio committee was informed of the suspension of the chief director of legal services. And I just wanted to ask if that case was ever resolved. And in the same presentation, we were informed that the recruitment to drive
to fill vacant posts in legal services were underway, and Canada Department confirmed that all vacant posts in legal services were filled. In 2020, the media also carried a story with regards to advocate Amanda Ledwaba's suspension. I mentioned that case in one portfolio committee meeting. We were told that we would get a report back with regards to her case. And I wanted to ask whether her case was resolved, and if not, what has caused the delay or what was the outcome. In November of 2011, we saw also through the media that immigration officers were arrested in Ermelo for extortion. And I wanted to know what was the outcome in that case. And then I think I read somewhere with regards to a suspension, or, and that was mentioned, with regards to the DDG of and Chief Director and Director responsible for labor relations, which of course happened last year in December. But maybe I want to ask, how is the department dealing with discipline and the absence of senior managers employed to manage disciplinary cases in the department? And maybe that is also one of the reasons why some of these cases are taking so long to be finalized. And my final question, thank you to the Minister to, with regards to the update with regards to the permits and visas. And I think while one is supportive of this multidisciplinary task team and the department sourcing those type of skills, again, timeframes. By when do we think we would be able to source these individuals that we need? Because, you know, obviously we received the report that says up to 40% of permits and visas, whether retirement, study or work visas, could be or could possibly have been fraudulently obtained. So clearly time is not on our side to be able to finalize or, you know, take a deeper dive into some of these issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Merve, for your contributions. Honourable Molekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also appreciate, start by appreciating the presentation. And we also appreciate the findings as presented by the Minister and the DG. Chairperson, we also take note that there are DC processes because of this matter that are taking, of the processes or the investigations findings by the task team appointed by the minister. We also appreciate the fact that there are no services affected because of the matter of officials that have been precautionary suspended and are undergoing the DC processes. Chairperson, we also we will appreciate that if the department can be able to set up mechanism to be put in place so that this matter should not repeat itself in future, and so that other matters that are affected by this process should be attended as a matter of urgency. We would like to know the presentation and the report has been presented. Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kanyile.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I have been covered.
Thank you, Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chair. I'm also covered. I'm fine, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ruas. Honorable Ruas.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, I just battled there a little bit. Not sure why it took so long to come on.
No, no, you can proceed. Yeah.
Yes, and thank you once again for the presentations. Just following up on the ZEP, I think we all understand that there are persons that take a chance. I think the point was that there is a danger in treating everyone one and the same. The minister stated that the ZEP holders re-avail themselves and go back to Zimbabwe. Do we have an indication of how many of the current ZEP holders have traveled back to Zimbabwe since obtaining their ZEP permit? And then in terms of the suspended senior officials, I had also asked, because these officials receive not only their salaries, but perks and performance bonuses while they're being investigated, are they made to pay back any of these perks or bonus money or salaries at all once they're found, if they are found guilty? Then in terms of the permitting, I'll ask the question again. Given that the chief director of permitting was in a very senior position in terms of the issuing of permits and clearly abused this position, it's been found that he did abuse this position, has this person been implicated in the permits investigation? Is he part of these 25 cases that have been mentioned? Then, Chair, the big concern with this report has to be that the report stated that a criminal syndicate is running inside permitting. So they are still there today. And given the poor procurement record of Home Affairs that we've been over many times in this committee, what is the actual deadline to resolve these 25 cases? I mean, if we look at how long is it going to take to procure these services, and what is the target deadline to have these 25 cases dealt with? Then there were serious IT breaches and also just procedural breaches that allowed this to take place. For example, the deletion of logs, which means that you can't see who did a certain thing or who made a certain change. So to what extent is this being directly addressed in terms of IT security systems that are being put in place to stop persons from being able to commit a fraud inside the department, bearing in mind again that these persons are there right now? And can the single entity review system designed by the review committee be used by the department until such time as their integrated systems are fully functional? Then there's the, finally, Chair, there's the issue of audit. And, you know, it appears that there were issues identified by internal audit in relation to visas and permits, and these were still outstanding once this review was done and these findings took place. And my last question is, how, if at all, are managers and supervisors being held accountable for the deliberate brush-off of these audit findings and recommendations? Because, Chairperson, we find it every year that we look at our audit findings, internal audit findings, the recommendations of the committees in terms of audits, and it comes back and it's the same thing year after year. So how are, who and how is this accountability being enforced in terms of certain audit findings not being implemented? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ross, for your contribution. Honourable Pile.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Mr. Matonsi, can we rise Musa is interrupting the meeting. I'm not sure.
From which
platform? Yes. Thank you, Mr. Salmon. Thank you very much. I'm not sure. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Salmon. Proceed, Onapile.
Thank you, Chair, for protection. It seems today I've been interrupted more than once. Eh? Chairperson, firstly, I think I want to just pick up on my previous question, which I think was not adequately addressed in respect of the IT system security. And I think Honorable Rose has also mentioned it now, but what is being done to address the IT system security, particularly when we find that there are most issues related to permit and visa fraud that is in respect of the IT system. Chair, I also want to suggest that we reintroduce and perhaps need to be presented regularly as this committee on the spreadsheet that we had for queries in terms of and just tracking when it has been lodged and when it has been finalized and those that are still pending, because that would give us a clear indication of where we are and where we've taken extremely or extra long. I think it'll be important for us to be able to deal with that. But I also want to further propose, Chair, that we then create a spreadsheet in respect of cases, DCs, when it comes to matters around staff. But also, Chair, I think it's important to protect you as the chairperson. I think you started off earlier by raising concerns about communication and acknowledgements. And we have to understand that you have related an incident or incidents. And the only reason you've raised it is because you've experienced this. And I think it's important for the minister to address those issues, particularly with the DG, DDGs and senior officials. And we really do not need to, find a way in which we're trying to, I wouldn't say protect, but also we must not move away from the importance of the issues raised by the chairperson, in particular when it comes to communication. I think it's key because as members of parliament, we receive queries from the public. And if we don't respond, we are seen as just ignoring them. So I think, when you are then writing to officials and relevant officials, we must also then be acknowledged and also respected in that view. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable, for your contribution. Honourable Modise Mta. It has also indicated that you'll be struggling with the network. We'll now invite the Director General, Deputy Minister, and the Minister. If they are delegation, they will outline. I'm sure all members have made their contributions. Director General?
No, thank you so much, Chairperson, and all the honorable members. Apologies, I think I got cut towards the latter part of the presentation. Maybe have to deal with the issue around queries. It's something that we will pay attention to. We do have officials that are assigned to chase these queries. And I think if we can get the latest spreadsheet, we should be able to work with Mr. Matonzi to address this issue. I do know that in the permitting area, they now have a team that's tracking not only the court cases, but all the TR applications, including a team that's looking at the backlog that we had accumulated when some of those services were closed. So it's something that I think we need to pay attention to. And some of the queries might be related to the backlog that the minister spoke about. And we do have a plan in terms of dealing with that backlog. We've also brought in colleagues from provinces to assist so that we can speed up the backlog with regards to visas. We have set deadlines. By the end of October, we would have attended to the bulk of those, mainly for those that are related to business and work visas. So there's a plan. But further than that, maybe Mr. Mavuso can speak to the CRM system. We do have a system through the call center that's able to track, and you are able to get a reference with regards to the query that you would have lost. Maybe let me go back to the questions that were asked by Honorable Van der Merwe. Firstly, on the Amanda Lidwaba matter, that's reflected on slide 23, Mr. Salmon, if you can bring it back. This is the pre-dismissal matter. We hope we should be able to start again tomorrow. It's scheduled for tomorrow, actually, to proceed. It's been on and off, but we hope that this time around, this matter should be finalized in terms of the period that's been set. Honorable Van der Merwe, you also asked a question with regards to Chief Director Legal. That's the matter that's under review on the same slide, 23. It's under review at the Labour Court. Thanks, Mr. Salmon. If we can go to slide 23. The first one. Correct. Thank you so much. we can have it on the slide mode. So, Honorable Funder Miebe, that's the pre-dismissal. That matter is in progress. They are sitting tomorrow with regards to this matter, with regards to Amanda Lidwaba. And then the second one review, it's with regards to the chief director at Legal. And then you also asked a question around the DDG chief director and the director. If we can move to the next slide, Mr. Salman. The next slide speaks to, or the same slide, I can deal with it there. You will note that under level 15, at the top, the area that's bolded in green, level 15, that's for the DDG HR, level 14 chief director HR, and then level 13, that's for the director at HR. You asked a question, how are we dealing with DC matters? Honorable Van der Meer, but there was very little movement on cases for quite some time, to the extent that that's why we took action against the DDG, against the chief director and the director. In certain instances, it led to litigation where the department has had to, as I was saying, suffer financial losses. So those are the cases that you asked about. And then how are we then dealing with these matters? We now have trained about 50 labor practitioners. Earlier in the presentation, I did indicate that on the 27th and the 28th of July, we had labor relations practitioners. I had an opportunity to meet all of them at that meeting where we are training them with regards to how to handle matters related to grievance and disciplinary procedures. In addition to that, so that we have quicker turnaround time, and afford officials an opportunity to respond to issues that are placed before them. We're set. We now have at least 18 law firms that are assigned to deal with some of these matters, which is why one of the dismissals for the level 14 was very quick. So there is movement on all these cases. On the next slide, those cases that Mr. Salman can move to the third slide from this one. There's an indication as to when those cases are due. And I indicated earlier on, we hope to conclude the matter for the chief director, the DDG and the director, all of them by the end of, respectively, the other one is October and the other one is in November. So that's with regards to those issues. And then, I think you did ask Honorable Ross around the issues of systems, IT, security. What we then did following the recommendations by Dr. Lubisi, one, we had to make sure that everyone who's using the system is accounted for, and everyone had to reapply, Honorable Ross, to gain access to the system. And we've made sure that that works and it's working quite well, so that we're able to monitor those breaches. And for civics in particular, and Mr. Mavuso can speak to some of these issues, they now get daily reports. Now, those daily reports, Honorable Ross, will give you an indication as to who was logged on and what products or applications they processed on a daily basis. So those reports we now receive, so that we're able to track. And we were yesterday, we then instructed counter-corruption to also play an active role as and when we get those reports, to look at if there's anything irregular, so that proactively we're able to deal with that. So that's one of the things that we've done, having to get everyone to reapply for access. And the fact that not everyone has access, there's limited access only for those that need to have access to some of those issues. And then Honorable Ross also asked a question around bonuses paid to those under suspension. We do not pay bonuses for anyone that's suspended. DDG HR can expatiate with regards to that. I think I've dealt with the two issues or the issues that were raised. I think as CFO, you can then deal with issues around the audit findings. In this area as well, we are acting on those that are responsible for either acts of wastage, irregular expenditure, which is why the chief director responsible for IT was dismissed last month. It's in relation to this matter, and there's another matter that's underway with regards to IT security, Chairperson. I think let me pause there and allow DDG Mabuso to speak to the issue around the CRM, and then CFO on the audit findings, and then DDG HR with regards to the issue around bonuses. If I'm allowed to invite them, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. DDG Mabuso?
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, just to indicate to the Honorable Ross that when we implemented the contact center, one of the systems that we brought on board was the CRM, which is a customer relationship management system, where we log all the queries, and we are able to track them in terms of its life cycle until completion. So that is in place, and we're more than welcome to invite Honorable Ross to the contact center at Hallmark Buildings for him to come and have a first-hand experience in that regard. And then the second issue is the one that the DG raised. So basically what we have done is that there is a team under Civic Services that looks at performance monitoring. What they do is that on a daily basis, they track transactions and also create an exception report. Exception reports, we've got, for example, people who log in after hours. We then check who logged in after hours, what were they doing, and then obviously that information is shared on a regular basis, actually on a daily basis, not regular basis, with counter-corruption, so that if we are able to zoom in. For example, there are certain instances where you'd find that the bad registration over the weekend, we want to see the user number, why they registered. So if in most of those instances, you'd find that it's a hospital bed registration, but we also don't want just to leave it at that. We follow up to ensure that it was a correct transaction that was done. So those are some of the monitoring mechanisms that we've put in place to ensure that we are able then to keep fraudulent. There are other methods that we are currently thinking of in terms of implementing, and some of them obvious, the ABIS dependent, some of them are not ABIS dependent. We will be implementing them as we move along. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, CFO.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to the members. Chairperson, on the audit findings, briefings, we are treating internal audit findings the same as AG findings, and we therefore develop audit action plans also for all internal audit findings. So there's no difference for us between an internal audit finding and an AG finding, Chair. Chairperson, the visa adjudication system findings, the IT findings, those findings are addressed in the audit action plan for the current financial year, Chair, and we trust that those findings will not reoccur. Chairperson, Minister has already indicated that a deep dive is necessary in respect of the VAS, the visa adjudication system findings, the VAS findings. And Chairperson, we do not have our skills in-house, so in order to address those findings, we will rely on the service provider, which we will then bring in to make sure that these findings are properly investigated, that the responsible people are held accountable, and that the system defects are addressed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CFO HR.
Thanks, Chairperson, and good morning to you and to the members. DJ, thank you very much. I think the response that you have given that whilst members are on suspension, they do not receive any performance bonuses. However, what they will be receiving, it is the service bonus, which is linked to their salaries. But anything that is related to bonuses during that time, they will not be eligible for. Thank you.
Thank you. For your response, Deputy Minister.
No, Chair, honestly, I've been covered by the management team with their answers. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, DM Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. There are several questions from Honorable Van der Merwe. Some of them were answered by the officials. She's still not satisfied about the issue of religious leaders, because the answer was that they get a 3-year 3-year visitor permit which can be renewed, and I realize she's not satisfied about that. The good thing about that, Honorable Van der Merwe, is that they all have a way to get permanent residence. But we are not stopping there to try and deal with this matter. For instance, some of them will come in to marry people illegally and go back. You will find that you are faced with an illegal marriage by a fraudulent marriage by a South African and somebody from another country, which was conducted by a religious leader from another country. Now, in the Marriage Act, remember we went through a marriage policy for a long time, but in the Marriage Act, which is about to arrive in Parliament because the bill is being drawn, we are withdrawing that power that anybody who gets married in South Africa can only be married by religious leaders who are South Africans. We still have to see how the courts will deal with that, but we are trying by all means to remove incentives for people to come and run religious activities in the country, when we ourselves have got so many religious leaders. We are aware that we are also overhauling the immigration laws, and part of that overhaul is going to include this matter. You also asked that whether we ensure that we deport people if they've been found with fraudulent documents in the country. Yes, we do, because once you are found with fraudulent documents, we recover them, then you suddenly become illegal in the country. For instance, if Bushiri is successfully expedited, I mean, is successfully brought back into the country to face the court, immediately appears in court, that issue which was stopped by the courts of retrieving our papers come into being, and once we retrieve our papers, he become illegal. And he must be dealt with like anybody who is illegal. It means the bank accounts he has opened using those documents will have to be closed. It means the businesses, and he has got several, which he obtained using those documents will also have to be closed. So it has got quite far-reaching implications. It's not as mild as people are thinking. The other issues about people who were mentioned by name, the DG has responded. Honorable Van der Merwe, sometimes the legal situation in our country is so difficult that sometimes we avoid mentioning people's names, especially if they are still going through these processes. We only start mentioning their names once the processes are over, like we did with the chief director who gave Bushiri documents. We have never released the name until the dismissal, because we might be wrong or paranoid. But the courts in South Africa, when it comes to these issues, sometimes are very heavy on us, like just giving bail to people who we think should not be deserving bail. So we are avoiding when we present to you. If you look at the slide by the DG, there's no name there. He calls people by titles or salary levels to try and avoid giving names, because we don't want the situation where we give somebody's name and the following day you are being taken to court and it delays matters. For instance, on the matter of the GPW, where we came to report to you, remember that committee that was chaired by Advocate Mujangu Kumbi and later by Mr. Malavi. I did mention somebody's name there. For your information, I've already received papers for defamation of character. I don't know how it's going to go on. Not that I'm scared of it, but it does waste time for the department. And even if we are going to defend ourselves, it will also waste money just because I mentioned somebody's name. The courts are used that way. So please forgive us when we try to avoid that. But the moment the case are over, we'll definitely give names to you. The issue of immigration officer arrested in Emelo. That immigration officer is actually a sister to the person you mentioned about pre-dismissal. She has since resigned from the department immediately after she was unveiled, but the criminal case is on. It is with the Hawks, but on our side, the person has resigned and ran away. You ask a question, you also ask about immigration officers in Mpumalanga. Yes. On the 24th of August, there was a media statement, actually, about this from the Hawks, not from ourselves. They issued a statement that two gentlemen, a Robert Booth, 53 years, and a Barry Victor Vegemuth, 35 years, were sentenced by the Nelspruit Commercial Crime Court on the 24th of August for corruption. Their sentence was about trying to blackmail foreign nationals in to give them money. They've been sentenced for 8 years each by the court in Mpumalanga, but half of those years have been suspended for a period of 5 years. We are mentioning names because the case is over. So something is happening, even though we are saying the Hawks are sometimes slow, but sometimes they are very fast. Chairperson, you mentioned the issue, Honorable Van der Merwe. How do we deal with issues of discipline when the DDG for HR is on suspension, the chief director is on suspension, and the director, because they are responsible for employment relations? Actually, our matters are moving much faster in their absence. Part of what they are charging them for is dereliction of duty, negligence, but there are quite a number of cases that should have gone through, which they were holding back. In some of them, if you remember when we released the statement, myself and the DG were charged for contempt of court, were threatened with contempt of court. In other words, we knew that they are delaying these matters when we received contempt of court papers. So it doesn't mean that officials who are suspended, we suddenly lose our capacity. Actually, in some cases, it becomes better to suspend them because they are the ones who are retarding the process. And this trade, definitely, we're doing something like that. Honorable Ross, your questions, unfortunately, are always bordering on the court cases that is in front of us, and it becomes very difficult to answer. Please bear with us. We'll release that information in court. Whether the chief director of permitting is part of the 25 cases, again, because of the nature of the deep dive investigation, please allow us to avoid that for now, but we'll definitely very soon, when things have been finalized, come to you, including the issue of criminal syndicates. Once the deep dive has been done, we'll tell you whether they are criminal syndicates or not and whether they've been identified. But for now, we are unable to do so for the legal reasons I've mentioned. On the issue of IT security, I think the DG has said a lot. I just want to add, a few days ago, you saw a headline in one of the daily newspapers claiming that we are making a U-turn on the issue of delegations in our foreign missions. They were saying we are making a U-turn because people have complained. We're not making a U-turn. It was part of our plan. But, you know, sometimes you get tired of dealing with newspapers because they are also struggling to sell these days. So sensational headlines are very good for them. Early in this year, Chairperson, our internal audit showed that some of the things that the team by Luvisi eventually revealed, they were also picked up by our internal audit as early as March. And we discovered that the people we have deployed in our missions are doing a lot of these things, like the issues of giving retirement visas to 16-year-olds. Some came from our mission, or you just find the person arrive here in South Africa with a permanent residence permit, which they got from our missions. So the issues of IT were also happening there. So what we did, we took over the powers and centralized them. We did not just do that. We put up mechanisms during that period. One of the mechanisms was mentioned by the DG, that everybody's access to the IT system was withdrawn, including, by the way, the DG himself. Even himself, we withdrew his powers and reissued them. And we reissued them with restrictions that you can only enter the IT system here. You can't go beyond. You can't do this and that on the IT system. Even the DG has got limitations. But apart from that, we divided the world into six regions. And there is a coordinator for each region who will check on a weekly or a daily basis what applications are coming from our missions. So we are doing this in order to deal with some of the findings of the Luvisi review committee. And then Mr. Mabuso has mentioned the issue of ABIS. You know what ABIS is going to do to us in terms of IT. And then passports. You will remember that I made an announcement some few weeks back that we are taking away the privilege of one collecting a passport from any office, which was hitherto done. You can now only collect your passport in the office where you have applied for it, and you can't send a third party to collect that passport for you as it was happening. You have got to come personally, and that passport won't be activated until you come personally, put your fingerprint, and activate the passport with your fingerprint. Any other method of acquiring your passport, it won't be active. We are trying to do so to fight all these battles, even the ones that the team by Dr. Luvisi has mentioned. So we are not really just sitting and waiting. And the counter-corruption unit is also busy with some of those things. So Chairperson, much as we say we are putting together a multidisciplinary team, we are on our own doing certain things which we can do, like on this issue on which we are being accused for a U-turn, when actually we needed 6 months to put up methods which will discourage our foreign offices from this corruption. That's why one of the things we have taken away from them is to issue permanent residence and retirement visas. They are no longer done in the missions, even with the so-called U-turn, because the so-called U-turn was about us saying, go back and do your work. We've got mechanism that will stop you from doing the shenanigans that we've been doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister, and the team, Home Affairs, for the responses. We are noting the reports and the presentation, Minister, that have been presented before the Portfolio Committee. We're also noting that the legal process that are underway in relation to the ZEP and the Bushiri matter and other related legal process that the Director General has outlined. We thank members of the committee for having carried their responsibility to comment and contribute to the discussions as a result of the presentation. I think want to appreciate that point. We also take note, Minister, on your remark earlier on the issues that the Portfolio Committee members raised through the chair on some of the weaknesses we have identified on behalf of our people. And want to appreciate that posture you have taken to note the issues that we are raising, because it will assist us as a collective to conduct our oversight and complement the work that yourself and the entire staff team complement are conducting at the Home Affairs Department. So I want to take that appreciation to that extent. We raised the matter on the communication of one of your DDG, and I think we must also reaffirm that the matter that you have raised. If you recall, 2 years ago, you gave us an official who must assist the team to deal with the queries. And that official was not coming to a party to the extent. And members raised concerns in the Portfolio Committee meeting. And that issue that was raised in the meeting assisted us and the officials to improve the communication line between us as the members of the committee or any other member of parliament or any citizen when queries are sent for their attention. And that was in good spirit in order to complement the work and easy the burden which Honorable Van der Merwe has highlighted, that we sit with queries which are not resolved. I'm referring you back to that matter that officials has able to improve and coordinate where their weaknesses we identified, and we come closer to close those issues. There's no need to seek to defend a wrong attitude other than to note and able to correct it. We know Mr. Simons, his good work when he was a PG in the Western Cape. In fact, we can account to his good work in that part of the province. And we're not raising this matter to demoralize, nor to antagonize any officials. We're raising this matter because there are issues before the committee to raise in the portfolio committee. We've cautioned you, the minister, that at some point we'll raise issues as we've been doing, because there are two platforms we can interact, is this platform and in parliament. And we're raising this matter objectively so that that part of the acting in immigration were able to assist members and the community. Where there's good work he is doing and other officials, we must appreciate it. We could not have came here and raised these issues if there was a commitment to just acknowledge basic and to attest to the issues that are raising issues. I can refer you to the Director General after the meeting and Mr. Sigama, on the issues that came before the portfolio committee, or to myself and other members in relation to what I've highlighted to the DDG. We are not taking out his good work. We know Mr. Simon committed and the work that we're doing. So let's work to service. I don't have a query, but citizens and other stakeholders may have queries on various sections or units in the department. But we're picking up this matter that at least there must be appreciation on the work that we're referring to the issues. I think Director General has also made that a commitment. We want to also note that we'll continuously monitor the issues that the minister you have raised in terms of the extension, the updates that you'll be giving us as the portfolio committee. And if you have noted, Honorable Modise raised that some of the issues are picked up in the media space or the press conferences where members are unable to have authority to respond to. And this presentation that has been presented before us give us clarity on some of the details that the department is engaging on, including Honorable Kanyile. She has been raising this issue of the ZAP for some time. And because of the absence of clarity from yourself or the department, today I think offered an opportunity to ground and have a responsibility to communicate on what is underway from the department. So I think we want to take note of all the reports presented, appreciate the team, and appreciate the members of parliament that have interacted with this response. In those ways, we'll take summary in terms of the issues that you have presented and interacted with members of the committee. We did appreciate the work and the continuous work that all the team and members of parliament are conducting for an oversight. Mr. Matonzi, is there any other matter that you want to interact with the committee or any announcement?
Chairperson, there's no other matter except that the oversight visit to the Free State Welcom and to Gauteng on the illegal mining has been approved. And then there are members that have confirmed, so we'll be providing the details in terms of when we are leaving and accommodation and the flight. So that's the only thing, Chairperson, that the oversight will be on. We're leaving on Friday, and then we're coming back on Monday.
Okay. Thank you, members. Thank you, Minister and your team. Thank you, officials. Our meeting stand adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Minister.